Hey guys, it's Aaron with The Hollywood Outsider, and if this is the first time you've ever listened to our podcast, please be sure to check out some of our back catalog. We have hundreds of episodes revolving around every topic you can think of in film and television, and it's all available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your podcast app of choice. But this week, it's all about dragons. Backstabbing, front stabbing, winter, war, everything's coming to Westeros, and the battle for the Iron Throne wages on. Consider yourselves warned as Brian Williams returns to lead our spoiler-heavy recap and reactions podcast for Season 7 of HBO's juggernaut TV series, Game of Thrones. Shall we begin?
Welcome, dear listener. This is The Hollywood Outsider, and you're listening to our Season 7 recap of Game of Thrones, the show that has totally ruined chicken pot pies for me for at least the next few years. My name is Brian Williams, and I'll be driving this dragon wagon from the warmth of King's Landing to those little half-frozen lakes that lays beyond the wall. With me are my fellow hoes from House Peterson, Sir Aaron of Blacklist. Aaron, how are you?
I'm good. What would my sigil be? Just like a red fedora or something?
No? Yeah, maybe just a microphone. and from House Clark, we have Sir Scott of Hyrule. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, Brian. How you been, man?
Doing great. And from House Davenport, we have Sir John, whose house motto is, "We crash fast."
And our unofficial motto is, "We go helmet first." So I'm doing great.
Good deal, man.
Is this like one of those, what do you call those little flyy things you do? What is that? Is that a reference to your
quadcopters?
Quadcopters,
drones, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, he's posted a few videos that just about make me, you know, nauseous from watching him flip and fly and twist and turn.
All he does is burn out. I don't know. Like, what did you spend all this money so you could crash these things into a wall? Great plan.
You haven't tried crash. Oh, I got a brilliant crash from when I was on vacation last week. But anyhow, yeah, you haven't done it. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
I can't wait to try it.
Use John's. It's a little bit cheaper. Well, if any of these references have confused you, we've explained John's there. But if any of these others, just hit up the Hollywood Outsider group on Facebook and pose your confusions there. Just kind of real quick, what'd you think about this season ender? Not too deep, just good, bad, crazy.
I loved it. I have not wanted to rewatch an episode so badly with people that haven't watched it in a long time. It's just so many things happened, and I came home and my wife asked me how it was because she doesn't go watch it with us, and I said, "Oh, things happened," and that's all I said. Things happened. And I can't wait to watch it with her because it's so many things. This season, we're going to get to the speed here in a little bit, but everything went at such a breakneck speed, and I'm just enjoying it. I feel like this season has been, I don't want to say a payoff because that makes it sound like every other season has been bad, but I really did like it, but it's been a bit of a slow burn in a good way, and I feel like I'm being rewarded for it. And this season has been great, and I'm just really looking forward to see how they're going to do this in the final season.
All right, so much for the quick part. Aaron, what about you?
I think it was very it's kind of like, okay, I had a thoughtful few seasons, and now I'm with my ADD nephew. Like, just my ADD, slow down, man, stop talking.
Had about four Mountain Dews and no Ritalin.
Yeah, exactly.
John, how about you, buddy?
You know, I've actually never heard so many expletives being shouted at the TV in my house until I sat next to my wife during this whole season. It was a lot of fun. It was great. And the show was good too. So it was a good season for me.
Good deal. Well, hey, you know what? Let's just kind of jump into this. And while we're at it, let's talk about the giant dead polar bear in the room here. And that's just, you know, you kind of alluded to it, the speed of this season. There's been a lot said about the pacing so far, and How did it affect your enjoyment of the series? Because it is quite a big difference from what we've seen in the past.
You think?
Yeah, just a tad. You know, it didn't hurt me one bit. And the reason why it didn't is because that's the one thing that's kind of hurt me for the show is like, oh my God, it takes forever for anyone to be going to go anywhere. And you're following along with these characters and you just want them to get someplace. And if I wanted the more of like people walking around doing nothing for 3 hours straight, I would watch Lord of the Rings over and over again. So I was fine with it. I don't know why everyone has to make a big deal about it. I'm okay. I don't want to watch walking the series.
I'm with you, John. I actually really appreciated it. Again, I didn't dislike the previous seasons. I had no problem with the pacing. But you got to remember, too, that those first 6 seasons were 10 episodes each. This one was condensed down into 7. Granted, some of them were a little bit longer. But I think I genuinely would have preferred having 7 episodes at this pace than 10 episodes with some things drawn out. It just feels like a better payoff for me. I feel like I'm at a speed that is keeping my eyes glued to the screen way more than ever before. And that makes it sound like I don't like it before, but you could kind of casually watch this show in the past. And now I am on the edge of my seat, can't look away. I really appreciate it. I think the other aspect of the speed that we're talking about is how quickly some of these characters are getting from one place to another. I mean, when Greyjoy showed up at Highgarden, was it Highgarden? No. At Castle Rock. It was like seriously like a 5-minute montage, and all of a sudden he's there. You're like, well, I guess we're a couple months later because it's going to take a long time to get there. And it was a little off-putting at first just because it was so different. But to me, that's all it is different. I'm with you, John. I don't want to have the travel and the conversations going on in between because things are ramping up and things are more important even though we have fewer characters. So I am on board with it, and I hope it keeps going this way.
Yeah, I think that Cersei should have had about 3 kids by now. If it's too slow, people complain. If it's too fast, people complain. So I really don't think there's a win-win there. But in terms of my personal opinion, I don't mind that they use transporter beams to bounce around the continent. I'm fine with that. That's the only thing that explains it. As long as it doesn't affect character moments. And I do think at times this season, our characters are jet-setting all over things that would have taken months before. Meanwhile, this Army of the Dead is taking forever to get to that wall. That doesn't really line up. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I really think sometimes it did make character moments suffer, and that's the only time I had an issue with it. I'm great. Jet all over the place. I disagree with Scott. I think this probably we could have gotten another episode or two out of it to flesh out some of the things that they just kind of skirted past, but that's just my opinion. I love the very deliberate pacing of the previous seasons. I think that is one of the things that was great about Game of Thrones, is it wasn't rushing. It wasn't an action show. It was a show about people and politics and intrigue, and you know, the action was a bonus. And granted, I realize we're building up to a big war, but it wasn't just all about action. I feel like now we're just kind of, it's all about the breakneck pacing as opposed to the characters. That's a personal opinion. I still love the show, though. I mean, I haven't started to dislike it. There's definitely some concern about some character moments that I think were lacking real resonance because of the pacing.
Well, I got a question for you guys. It's kind of a logistics question when it comes to these armies and the dragons traveling from one place to another. Because all you really see is when they leave or when they arrive, and the dragon is either with them or showing up. Is that dragon like flying in circles the whole time while this army is traveling, or does the dragon like jump ahead a mile or so and sit and rest and wait for the army to catch up? I mean, how does that work? You can't put the dragon on a boat or...
I think it's obviously the dragon had to rest at some point, so there's probably some sort of ship that it was sitting on, you know, drifting across the ocean. But on land, yeah, I mean, really probably a mixture of both. I'm assuming probably flew ahead. Hey, there's a little hill, a mountain or something that it could kind of perch on for a little bit, catch a nap while the slow little humans walk their way towards you. And by the same token, I think it's just one of those things to where they want to be fairly close to Dany, you know, so.
Yeah, they do. Who doesn't?
You know, those dragons could be just as easily just riding thermals, which riding thermals for birds is not that that big of a deal. So it could be dragons riding thermals as well.
Dude, a bird is about like 2.5 pounds. I don't think a dragon's going to be using thermals.
Don't bring science into this.
Yeah, why? It's a dragon. Why are you bringing science into this?
I'm just saying, you brought science into it. I'm just rebuttaling your science.
Well,
no, he used the word thermals. They have fire coming out of their mouth.
They just head down.
I mean, maybe they generate their own body of heat, which then creates a thermal underneath them the entire time. Who freaking knows?
Who cares?
They're riding a thermal cushion that's pushing off the ground. It's, you know, it's fantasy science.
Is that what's in the jetpack that the Ravens have to get back to Danny so she can get back on her jetpack dragon? That's the only thing I had a problem with. I'm like, what? Okay, that one was ridiculous.
Can we talk about the Ravens, by the way? How is every single message delivered by Raven always make it? How is there nothing that's just
it's
lost?
Like Westeros email, man. It's fast. I love it.
I mean, once you see one Raven, they all look alike. I mean, how are you going to know which one to shoot down?
I feel like that was a racist joke. I don't know what that was.
Aaron, how dare you?
Well, all righty. So before we get too far off the rails here, what about speaking of dragons and ravens and all sorts of other critters? How sick have the special effects been this year? Because some of these dragons look, you know, for lack of a better term, real. I mean, this is Aaron. What about it? Have they ramped it up pretty much this season?
Oh man, it's ridiculous. Every year, I'm more and more impressed, I think, with what they managed to do on a TV show budget. I mean, I know that they have more money than most TV shows, so it's not really fair. You know, NCIS isn't going to be able to pull off a dragon anytime soon. But it's
$10 million per episode.
Yeah, it's doing okay. You know, they've got some money behind it, but it's still like movie quality at almost every turn, and it still blows me away. And you couple that with the stellar score, and I challenge anybody to find a better score or effects anywhere on TV. It's phenomenal across the board.
I was impressed with how the dragons looked the first time you saw them when they were fully grown. When Daenerys is sitting on that hill or whatever and she's feeding him and all that, I was like, holy cow, these things are looking legit. And they just keep getting better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And just the epic moments that we're going to get into that involve the dragons, accompanied with a score, like you said, were just so badass and so beautiful and devastating to watch at the same time. It's amazing how much quality they put into this thing.
Is anybody waiting for one of the dragons to sound like Benedict Cumberbatch? Because I am.
Well, no, these dragons look better than that dragon.
I don't know about that, but I definitely think they should start talking. If one of them started talking and Benedict Cumberbatch's voice came out, I would probably start applauding. I'll be honest.
You know how many people would be so pissed? They were pissed that Ed Sheeran made a cameo appearance.
I'm with him. He took me out of the freaking scene.
But Benedict Cumberbatch wouldn't.
No, because he's awesome and Ed Sheeran is not. Yeah, I said it. What? Write a letter.
You just lost half of our listeners.
Send a raven.
Not this one, though. Not this one, because I completely agree.
I like Ed Sheeran. He's fine, even though his songs really don't mean anything. But I like his music. I actually have some of his music on my Spotify. But when Ed Sheeran just pops up in the middle of a scene, it definitely makes you think, hey, Ed Sheeran, instead of, hey, random Lannister soldier. That's the only thing.
It made you think. Fair-haired ginger with a sweet voice that's sitting here with all these other burly, dark-headed soldiers
and says, I'm gonna write his thong about it. Oh my god, really?
Sweet ginger. He's a little hobbit looking guy. He's okay, he can fit in perfectly fine. He's not that handsome of a guy.
I didn't have that problem, a problem with it either.
He's known, yeah. That's the thing. That's the only problem I have. He stands out because he's so known.
He stood out for you because the group that we were watching with, it just went batshit crazy when he came on screen.
That isn't why, man. As soon as he came up, I'm like, oh, it's Ed Sheeran? Really? We're doing this right now? And I know they've had other celebrities on there, but they're people nobody knows, so it's different.
Right.
It wasn't like a guy from the Mets?
Yeah, there's one of their star pitchers for the New York Mets was one of the guys who threw a javelin or spear when the Lannisters got their asses kicked on that loot train attack.
It was like a blink and you miss it moment, though.
Yeah, and if you know, he's not going to be recognizable by most of the people watching this show. And even though it gave him a couple of seconds of FaceTime, even though I knew who he was and I knew he was coming up in an episode, I didn't know that was him till the next day. So that's the kind of cameo that you need.
I had no idea who he was.
They should have made him a dragon, is what I'm saying.
Well, speaking of dragons singing, if your legs don't work like they used to before,
what is happening right now?
Oh man! Well, you know, let's maybe get on a little bit of a sour note here. Which of the deaths we've had a number of deaths this year? So, which one of these affected you the most this season?
Scott. Well, that's an easy answer for me because Littlefinger's death was just unexpected. I mean, I kind of had suspicions of something going on between Sansa and Arya, but I was not expecting it at that moment. And it was almost bittersweet because as much as I can't stand Littlefinger and his conniving ways, I always enjoyed his conniving a little bit because I liked seeing things get worked out. Or just his plot thickening and everything. And I don't know. I'm a little not sad to see him go. I'm so glad he's gone. And the way that he did go was fantastic. But that one affected me the most just because, yeah, I think my audience that I was watching with just damn near stood up and cheered when that happened because it was long and drawn out, but then quick. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was kind of the same way. I was talking to the TV, like, oh, you know, and you know, it was kind of like, oh my god, this.
I love the look on his face. The look on his face when they said Peter Baelish, and it's just like, oh my god, the look on his face was I could eat that with a spoon. Yeah, he's really,
like, what?
It's like the number one like GIF yesterday, I think, when with just that like look of him looking over, like, huh.
I was really disappointed that we lost the Sand Snakes too. I mean, I wanted to see them do some awesome stuff and they were kind of disappointing. I thought, okay, well, surely we'll see them do some pretty kick-ass stuff this season. And no, I mean, they just kind of bitched at each other. And then, you know, Oberyn's dead, Hot's dead, and even Hotter's dying. So,
yeah. So that sounds like three reasons why I don't need them on the show anymore. You know, I mean, you just kind of sold me as to why I don't miss them at all. I'm like, bye. Yeah. Sand Snakes.
From what I gathered from the book readers, because a lot of the book readers that I talked to or even heard talking were excited about them because I'm guessing in the books, they're a little bit more badass, but in the show, they weren't portrayed that way very well. So when it come down to them dying, I was kind of like, okay, good. We got rid of some dead weight. We can focus now, you know, the focus is narrowing a little bit. So
I will tell you the one that hit me the most, which is funny because it's not Olenna. Is it Olenna? Is that how you say your name? How do you say your name?
Olenna.
Okay. Olenna. I'll talk about her in a little bit in Brian's format, but the one, because her death was really kind of thuggish a little bit, but the one that really hit me the most was Viserion. It was so, even though I knew it was coming because somebody spoiled it for Brian and I, and I want to still punch somebody in the balls for that one, but it still hit me, man. The way that it happened, throwing that ice spear, that Olympic javelin throw, you can make fun of it all you want. I don't care. It's beautiful. I don't know how far those guys can throw. They're fictional. And I got very emotional about animated CGI character. I'm like, it's like you killed the flying puppy. Why did you kill the flying puppy? I like the flying puppy. And it really broke my heart.
Oh, man. Yeah, and actually it's funny because Olenna was the one for me. I think I've watched her final scene there. I know probably four or five times already. And you know you don't see her die. You of course know she dies, but that was just I guess it was such a badass way of going out for such especially for such an old woman that she was just tough. And she's one of the characters I'm definitely gonna miss going forward.
Oh, totally. She was like a great character because she was vulgar without being vulgar, if that makes sense. Like she was, I mean, she swore every once in a while, but she just had this edge to her that you couldn't wait to hear what she was going to say next, but she never went over the top like the Hound or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she was like,
matter of fact, with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. I would say she was like your grandma if your grandma listened to Ice Cube. She's pretty big. You know who nobody misses? Dickon. That's who. Nobody cares.
Dickon.
Dickon. Nobody cares
it's
about
Dickon,
you.
Dickon, not Dickon. Dickon's
oh, call man. Him whatever I want.
The first time Dickon got announced in front of Braun, and Braun just started cracking up laughing. Oh, that was so great.
You think there were a few too many dick jokes this season? I mean, it started this. The finale even started with like four in a row. Just bam, 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 bam. Maybe it all breaks down to that. You know, didn't you think there's a few too many? Maybe
I found them pretty funny.
Okay. And I'll just kind of build on that. Do you think Theon was maybe kicked in the where his balls used to reside? Do you think he was maybe kicked in there a little too often? I mean, like he's once like or twice should have been once or twice should have been enough to get the point across.
That he's got a big old callus between his legs now.
Yeah, you know, Jesus. he's a Ken doll.
It's a superpower. Who knew?
Yeah. It's been replaced with a steel plate. Bam.
That poor guy. Is there one character that needs to go? It's Theon Greyjoy. Arc is pointless.
It's about time.
Yeah, a lot of people are kind of excited about his sort of pseudo redemption thing, and I'm just waiting for him to hurry up and die. Yep.
I don't know. I really like the exchange between him and Jon.
I hold the grudge against him like Aaron holds the grudge against Jaime Lannister.
I'm with you on both. He's unforgivable. He's unredeemable to me. So
yep.
Don't care.
Jon Snow's a bigger man than me, little midget. Anyway.
But I agree with Scott. It was a great moment between the two of them.
Yeah, but it doesn't wipe the slate clean.
No.
No, and he didn't even say, he said he forgave him for the things that he could forgive him. He didn't forgive him for everything.
Yeah, I guess that's all you can ask for. So, all right. Well, let's kind of just dig into the season here. We're going to go in. So in past episodes that we've done this, we've gone through the season geographically to much critical acclaim, I might add.
You just did. So I guess you must. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. This year ain't going to be no different. Even though the number of locations may be a little bit smaller, we will probably miss a few things. We'll forget to mention some others. Of course, some of these will probably be important to you, and we'll throw out a blanket apology to make you feel better because we don't want to hurt nobody's sensitivities around here. So, but we're just pretty much addressing this whole season in kind of a broad swipe. And again, if we've left out something, I'm sure you'll let us know. So we're going to kind of start with the smaller locations or the short-term locations, the Twins, Dragonstone, Highgarden, Casterly Rock, and even the Citadel. Most of the season takes place really in only a few places. And first off, we'll just start with the opening episode, the opening scene there with at the Twins where Lord Walder Frey lives. We pick up basically where last season ended. What were you thinking in those first few moments of this sequence as Arya begins to bring Winter to the Frey family there, John?
I wanted to see exactly where she was going with this, because if you remember from the last season, she did kill Walder Frey in a pretty big way. And so to see him sitting there again, you're like, all right, well, we already know that's Arya because that's her thing. And then he stands up and he starts talking and he starts pointing out everything they've done to the Starks. And then what I thought was funny rewatching that whole scene was like the women in the room kind of look at him going, well, this doesn't sound anything like you. And then the guys are just like cheering him on and going on. And then they drink and they die. And it's just a beautiful moment that lasts only 3 minutes, but it feels like it takes forever in a good way. You kind of just bask in it. You kind of like you take it all in. You're like, yes, this is what we've been waiting for. We want to see Arya go nuts. And it was nice to see a cute little psychopath win at something.
See, I'm an idiot because I didn't realize it was her the first time.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm like Sansa. I'm a slow learner, but hey, I learn.
Yeah, I really thought we were seeing a flashback. I thought there was something going backwards because it just seemed, in my mind, that would have been too obvious, or in my subconscious, I don't know. I really thought we were seeing a flashback of a previous meeting that was going to set some kind of backdrop, and so I was surprised when everybody. Well, I kind of knew they were going to die when the wine started pouring and he told that one wench to not drink it, not you. And it was a very sweet moment. It was,
why is she going to be a wench, man? Jeez, I don't even know her.
Well, she was one of his What else are you calling? What's a politically correct?
These are jokes, Scott. Word. It's okay. You can laugh. It's fine. You can
It's fine. We know they're wenches, Scott. It's okay. We know.
Okay.
Now you offended wenches. Nice job. I thought it was exciting. It was a really kick-ass way to start the season. It's funny because the rest of the premiere was kind of slow. And then everybody started bitching about the pacing. It's going too fast, but everybody complained that the premiere was too slow, which just cracks me up that no one's ever happy. And I'm kind of wondering if Ethan Hunt's missing some more masks. I don't know what's going on with that. But I love how Arya has come to this point to where she can actually pull that off and kill everybody that she needed to kill throughout the entire season. It was a masterstroke to start the season with that scene. We don't get the theme song to start it off. We get that scene. And that was fantastic. A kick-ass way to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, starting out with a genocide, I mean, that's kind of pretty hard to top. So yeah, I thought it was pretty neat. I was confused for the first probably minute and a half of that scene. We're trying to figure out, okay, flashback or faceless girl. So
are you guys mad that they didn't use that more this season? I know some people wanted it used more.
No, I think it would have been overkill. It sort of feel like Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I would have had feelings either way about it. I think seeing Arya go nuts more often would have been better, or would have been a lot of fun. But I don't know if it would have added or taken away from the show at all. I can't make that judgment without actually seeing it.
Those people don't use that every single day. You know, they're not constantly just swapping out masks and going, there's a time and a place for it. But they're just not going, okay, bam, I got this face. Okay, I got, all right, I took out the harbor master this morning. I've got to get the king's cook by 11 o'clock. And then I've got to be across town to take out the blacksmith by 2:30. So I got to get moving. You know, it's not like that. It's like,
it's all funny games till Sansa's like, why do I only ever see one person at a time in this whole keep anymore?
Well, I mean, if you think about it too, the whole masks, faceless man deal was a big misdirection for the Littlefinger's death, because Sansa finding those, and it was all you were meant to believe that Littlefinger was orchestrating this whole thing, and they were pulling the double sting on him by saying that Arya was going to, she basically threatened, even though she wasn't doing it for real, she was doing it for Littlefinger's ears, to kill her and then take her spot and become Lady of Winterfell.
See, I saw that. You're talking about the scene where Sansa sees the masks and they have their little tense moment. I saw that. How I read the situation was that was really going down the way it was. And I think Arya was reading Sansa's response. And how I read it is Bran basically informed the sisters of what was going on, because Bran was sitting there next to Sansa at the time of Littlefinger's demise. So I think that this wasn't a big ruse like, oh, we're pulling the double switch on you. I think that there was legit tension there until Arya realized what was going on. And of course Sansa, by being taught by Cersei and Littlefinger, she's now wise enough to realize the whole scope of everything. You factor in Bran's input, bam, they take him out. So I think that was, I don't think that was a long play. I think that was pretty much a short play.
Interesting.
Okay.
I don't know, because at the end of that scene, Arya hands her the Littlefinger's dagger, but Arya's got it back.
Right, but there's no evidence that Littlefinger is sitting outside the door listening with a cup to the door.
That's
if
true.
We have to assume that he was not there eavesdropping. So
see, I assume
What benefit does it bring to have this big fake argument in front of nobody?
Well, throughout the entire series, though, Littlefinger has known stuff that he's not supposed to know, not because he's eavesdropping, but because he has spies.
He's got little birds, too. Yep.
Yep.
Right. But
there's nobody in that room, though.
There's nobody in the room. The door's closed, and we don't have any hints that anybody is outside. So I have to assume that nobody is eavesdropping, whether it's Littlefinger or a bird, whatever. And so I just assume like I said, that's just the way that I interpret it. And that's what I love about this series.
Yeah, we can have this discussion for about 45 minutes. Yeah,
exactly. And you can have somebody like, well, I had this conversation with somebody, a coworker, about a couple of weeks ago where Littlefinger gives a little smirk. And it was like, oh, yeah, he was thinking this at the time. I said, oh, well, see, I took it as he meant this. And we had a 10-minute conversation on the possibilities of both, and they both made a lot of sense. So
that's why I love the show.
Absolutely. All right. Before we get really, really deep, let's move on. So Daenerys lands at Dragonstone, which is her birthplace, and immediately sets up her little war room with her council, and then starts immediately blasting Varys in this big interrogation. Shouldn't she have really done this maybe the season before?
Like when she's on the boat with him?
Yeah, like when she's on the boat, when she sent him to down south to get the snakes and the Martells. And it's like this that whole scene there felt a little bit weird and out of disjointed for me. I don't know.
I will tell you, I had some real conflicting opinions about Daenerys throughout the season. There are moments where I think she's being too critical. Like she's jumping all over Jon Snow before she jumps all over Jon Snow. You know, when he gets there, she's all over him, and she's like, no, I don't like you. Your family sucks. You know, you hurt my family, blah, blah, blah. And I get it to a degree, but I also think he came to her and he was trying to be, John, stop it.
John liked that joke way too much.
So, you know, there are times where I thought she was too harsh. I thought she was too harsh on Varys, but I get why she would do it. And then there, as the season, after the halfway mark, I thought she was too trusting, almost like she was too comfortable in her own skin. Like she no longer felt that she could be betrayed or something. And she felt a little too cocky because of her dragons. Up until her dragon went down, I think she was really getting a little too cocky. And so I'm kind of conflicted because I don't know which Daenerys was it supposed to be. And I know I keep saying her name wrong. It's Daenerys, not Daenerys. So I don't know which.
Did you do that last season?
Yeah, I do it every season. So, you know, what are you going to do? So
make
I don't,
fun of you for it.
That's fine.
Making fun of you every year.
That's fine. Daenerys, I thought, was a conflicting character because I feel like she didn't know where she should be. And even at the very end where you get her in that where she's next to Cersei and they're having the meeting in the pit, I really expected her to seem more queen-like, more forceful. And I felt like she sat there like a little girl.
She didn't hardly say a word.
Yeah.
Just said except to bitch out Jon Snow for saying the wrong thing.
Well, I think that's because her character has grown a little bit too, because when she was younger, she did whatever she wanted, what she felt, and hardly took counsel from anybody else. And now she's got a bunch of advisors and she's making the final call, but she's letting them speak for her and she's actually adhering to their advice a lot more, which, you know, that's a little bit more queenly, I think.
It's bad advice though. So stop it.
Well,
it's possible she didn't say anything much because she's probably counseled to not say much at that meeting because their feelings are running so deep against each other. And not only that, but the point of the meeting wasn't so that the two, like Daenerys and Cersei, can square off against each other. It was to show off the white and to show that the dead are walking. That was the point of it. And I think they were trying very hard to stick to the narrative they're trying to create, as opposed to create so many more problems just by having everyone in the same place at the same time.
Well, if you remember the previous episode, or maybe it was two episodes prior, Tyrion himself told her, you sometimes are quick to act and quick to anger. And so, like John said, I think she was advised to keep her cool and let everybody else speak for her. And just her being there was a big deal, even though she was fashionably late.
Fashionably late, yeah.
That's what you call riding on a dragon, eh?
Yeah. Well, she's like, we've been here for some time. I actually almost said out loud when we watched this, you know how I like to make an entrance.
And plus, she'd only been there for like a minute and a half. Calm down, woman.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like it was hours.
Yeah, the walk from the entrance to your chair does not count.
Although in this new time frame, maybe that was like 6 months. I don't know anymore.
Right. She's got like bed sores on her butt from just sitting there for 3 months.
I've been here forever, woman. You're flying around in your dragons.
Well, yeah, kind of speaking of all this, you know, we're kind of reminded that John is pretty much a horrible diplomatist. I mean, he's just, and he's up, well, you know, he's got a fetish for chicks in caves. You know, I mean, he just, well, somebody, how did he end up being the, like, the voice of everybody during this
he's little, the rightful heir. That's why. Duh.
Well, they don't know that.
They know it.
Even he doesn't know that.
He doesn't even know that. So, but all of a sudden, here's this guy that you know, he's so frustrated. Even as soon as this season, he's frustrated talking with Tyrion. Like, he's trying to explain his position, and Tyrion's kind of trying to help him. And he's basically calling him, look, you are as dumb as you sound, because, you know, you can't even figure out how to convince Danny, you know, to do this stuff. So it was amazing to me that John was the one who was the one trying to convince Cersei in front of all these people that she should join him. I don't know. To me, that was just really weird. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts.
John at this point has developed this relationship, not relationship, but this, what's the word I'm looking for? This, well, I guess let's just use relationship with the world, where everyone understands that Jon Snow says exactly what he feels. He's going to do exactly what he says he's going to do. And he is damned if he's going to go back on his word. Everyone understands that. Everyone seems to understand that, because Jon Snow just lives in this perfect world. But at the same time, he acknowledges the fact that he lives in a perfect world and the world outside is imperfect, and he's constantly butting against it. And he accepts the repercussions of that way of life, but he's not going to give that up because somebody has to do the right thing. So you got to really respect the guy for sticking to that, even in this world where he is waist deep in snakes and he is the only person with any sense to be reasonable and honest about what he's going to do.
Especially when his father was killed for that very thing.
Right. Especially then.
Thank God they brought that up. Thank God he had that monologue and actually said that out loud. That was probably, that would have been a real problem for me if there was no acknowledgement of that, because that bugged me all season. It's like, he keeps doing the same mistakes. People have talked about that for years. You keep doing the same mistakes that got your father killed, the same mistakes that got him killed once already. And he's not going to stop doing them because he knows it's the right thing to do. And when he gives that monologue about if you stop doing what you say you're going to do, words stop meaning anything. That was a great monologue. Very small, very subtle, but it said everything you need to know about that character. I actually think he's doing a great job, Brian. I mean, maybe he's not kissing ass and babies like he should, but I also think he really just wants to get an army and stop the world from ending. That's really all he cares about. He doesn't care about all this political crap.
Yeah. All right. Cool. It's just, you know, he's just historically, he's not been a good orator, which is why he's one of the reasons why he's always carried Davos Seaworth with him to.
Oh, yeah, because he's a master wordsmith, isn't he?
No, he's way better. He's not a fighter.
This is Jon Snow.
That was a great moment.
Touché. Yeah, that was good. Alrighty. Well, let's just keep moving on here. What about Euron Greyjoy? I mean, Dany kind of gives in to Tyrion, and he pretty much keeps giving her bad tactical advice as far as fighting and stuff goes. So they put an attack on Casterly Rock, only to see her navy beaten down by Euron Greyjoy. He's pretty much the bad guy, but is anybody liking this guy at all? I mean, I kind of find him a little charming in a bad way.
I disagree. I don't like him at all. And not just because he's a villain, because there are some villains that you like. As much as I hated, oh my goodness, I can't remember the Cersei son's name. Why is that name escaping me?
Joffrey.
I hated Joffrey, but you really liked hating him. He just made your skin crawl, and you knew something bad was going to happen to him. You couldn't wait to see it happen.
He's like that scab that you have that just, you know, picking it makes it worse, but it feels good to pick it anyway.
Right. But Euron he's just an asshole, but he's not a big enough asshole to make him likable. The only things that he's done that I really liked are when he got Jaime all fired up when he was asking him how to do his sister. Like, I want to do it like you do it kind of thing. That was awesome. But that was about the only really cool moment for me with him. Everything else is just him just being a jerk off. I don't find jerk offs entertaining. I just find them jerk offs. He didn't do a whole lot for me.
I like him because this show definitely needs somebody to hate.
Cersei's not enough?
Well, Cersei is not exactly enough because she's Cersei and she seems to get away with a lot of shit. And then and Baelish was there, but you kind of like Baelish, but you can't wait for Baelish to get his comeuppance. And this is the kind of thing I feel like Euron's all about too. You kind of like him because he's there. He's kind of a heel and he's good at being the heel. And you really can't wait to see him get his comeuppance, which might happen, maybe. Who knows? But I think it's more about him just being the heel for the show at this point.
I don't like him at all. I mean, and not in the, hey, he's a villain. I don't like him. He reminds me of like Shakespeare in the Park or something. I just think the guy is trying way too hard. And
does
I think
mother know you wear her drapes?
He's not that good, man. He's like, he's Miles Teller level of average. He's just,
oh my God.
He's just okay. He just runs around over dramatizing every single scene he's in. He's almost like he wants to be Jack Sparrow, but he doesn't want to go all the way. I don't know what the hell's going on with the guy, but he doesn't really make me, I'm not frightened of him. I'm not worried about what he'll do. I mostly laugh at him when he makes a threat. Now, he's not a Ramsay. He's not a Joffrey. That's what I'm saying. He's a mid-level, mid-token bad guy. That's it. And I don't care about his story.
Are you trying to say that being a pirate, you have to actually go full Jack Sparrow to be a good pirate?
I
don't want to be a pirate.
I feel like he's trying. He's trying too hard to be bad instead of just being bad. Like, that's the one thing about Ramsay is like, you know, he toted that line. He was so close to just jumping over that line, but he never went over it. This guy, I think he's just average. I'm sure he's a fine actor. Maybe it's how it's written. I don't know. But it feels like he's trying way too hard to me.
See, I kind of like him. I think he gives a little bit of a different personality than most of the other characters, mm-hmm. especially some of the more stodgier ones that we've grown accustomed to. Even Jamie's kind of stodgy. Freaking Cersei, of course, is. Everybody's just kind of stiff, and he's got a swagger that nobody else has. I'm not saying it's a good swagger. It's a different swagger, and to me, it's just it's like, all right, it's kind of like curry. It's a good spice. I don't know if I like a lot of it, but it's good in its own way.
Doesn't stodgy mean dull and uninspired?
I don't know. Whatever. Stiff, boring. Sometimes. I mean, they're all like cookies.
It sounds like he's using the word properly, Scott.
So, okay, thank you.
I wouldn't consider Cersei dull.
No, she's what? No, you think Cersei's dull?
Her actions are not dull, but her performance, her stiffness is.
No,
the way she carries herself.
No,
she never moves.
She doesn't need to. She does everything with her eyes and her inflection. She's great.
I'm not saying she's not a great actress or a good actress. I'm not saying that her character is bad, but I'm saying that Euron brings a swagger and a panache that nobody else in the series brings.
Which I like that that everybody else doesn't do that because it's too much. Doesn't stand out. He's like cartoony.
Yeah, if everybody else did that, it would be the Pirates of Penzance.
That's what it feels like. He's like Snidely Whiplash.
We've already got Bronn. We've got
Make Bronn a villain. Bronn would be a great villain. Make him a villain.
Shut your face.
Depending on whose side you're on, he kind of is.
That's true, but you know, I think he would make a great villain for the audience because he has enough. He's got that Rickman-esque charm, you know what I mean? And yeah, I would love that. And he wouldn't go too ridiculous like Pirates of the Penzance guy. And we don't use actors' names for this for the most part. We just use the characters' names, just so you know.
Yeah.
We have IMDb too. We can look it up if we really wanted to.
Yeah. We're not that thorough, so piss off. Well, all right. Well, at the Citadel, Sam cures Jorah while Gilly discovers Jon Snow's actually more entitled than Dany. And I still can't eat that chicken pot pie that I mentioned earlier.
No joke.
Did you guys, Aaron, actually, I know you did because we discussed it immediately, pretty much. But the rest of you guys, did y'all catch the significance of Sam kind of ignoring her ramblings right off, or did that kind of take a minute to set in?
I actually had to rewind that scene three times for the people in my house. I think we had people over that night, but because I was like, oh my God, did you guys just catch what she's reading? And they're like, no. So I rewound it. All right. Did you get it? no. Okay, one more time, guys. And did you get it this time? They're like, no. Okay, then I had to explain it to him what she was reading. And then the fact that, like, that's when Sam kind of throws his hands up in the air, packs everything up and leave. I'm like, no, Sam, you're missing something important here. I didn't catch that he had realized he had read it before and that he already knew that information. But like the fact that she was reading it out loud, I really had to make sure everybody in the room caught it, because it was so subtle and pretty well executed the way they did it.
For me, I caught it, but I was like, man, that seems like some really important information. But I just, because it was just glossed over so quickly, I never really gave it a second thought again until this recent episode.
Like, recognize that I should probably pay attention to this, but not really sure the context of how important it really might be.
Exactly.
Gotcha. No. I mean, it's that. I mean, I think that was most people. I mean, it was a pretty. I thought it was a pretty neat way of breaking that news, so to speak.
I thought it was great, and I caught it right away, and I was mad that nobody else did. I'm like, how did you not catch this? I thought the only person that didn't was Sam.
But damn phones down and pay attention, you jackasses.
I call Brian. I'm like, nobody's understanding what I'm talking about. Why are they not excited about that? And then can I just point out, we get to that finale, and he's taking all the credit. He's like, doesn't even mention Gilly. He's like, oh, yeah, I figured this all out. Yeah.
Well, and I heard a couple of theories about this, that – because he's had his, you know, his new job is to transcribe all these books. He's already transcribed it and read it. And like, so he's kind of thinking, yeah, whatever. I know this because I've just written it down. Because she's not flipping through these pages that are decaying and all this other stuff. She's flipping through the pages that he's already written.
Right. So it was more for the audience than it was him.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, but like a lot of scenes in this season, it probably could have been conveyed a little bit better.
One more episode could flesh a lot of stuff out, man.
That's right.
The dragons are vulnerable.
We can't beat the Dothraki. We don't have the numbers. We don't have the support of the other houses.
No, we have something better. We have the Iron Bank. You should have listened more when Father spoke about the importance of gold. Oh, I know it's boring for you. You just wanted to hunt and ride and fight. When I listened, I learned. Highgarden bought us the most powerful army in Essos. The Golden Company. 20,000 men, horses, elephants, I believe.
The Golden Company is not here. They're in Essos. How is a mercenary company in Essos going to help us?
Do you really think Euron Greyjoy turned tail and sailed back to the Iron Islands? Do you think he abandoned the chance to marry the queen? No one walks away from me. He's sailing with his fleet to Essos. He's going to ferry the Golden Company back here to help us win the war for Westeros.
You plotted with Euron Greyjoy without telling me the commander of your armies.
And you conspired with Tyrion, the man who murdered our father, without telling me your queen.
I didn't conspire with
him. You met with him in secret without my consent. You planned to promote my enemy's interests. That is the definition of conspiracy.
I pledged to ride north. I intend to honor that pledge.
And that would be treason.
Treason?
Disobeying your queen's command, fighting with her enemies. What would you call it?
Doesn't matter what I'd call it.
I told you no one walks away from me.
Are you going to order him to kill me? I'm the only one you have left. Our children are gone. Our father is gone. It's just me and you now.
There's one more yet to come.
While Casterly Rock was falling to Daenerys' forces, Cersei's army, which was led by Jaime, were attacking Highgarden, which was the home of the Queen of Thorns, our very own lovable Olenna Tyrell. What a way to go out. What you think, Aaron?
Gangsta. I said it earlier. It was a gangsta move, man. She's like, let me just suck down this poison, toss out this little truth bomb as I peace out this bitch. All she was missing was like an NWA t-shirt, and she would have just rocked it. I loved her.
Just flip the double deuces real quick.
Nannies with attitudes.
Freaking Snoop Dogg pops out of the corner. What? Yeah, it was a total gangster move. Loved, probably it might be my favorite death scene, because it's the one death.
You don't see it.
What's that?
Because you don't see it. That's part of it. I love that you don't actually see her keel over.
No, that's not. It has nothing to do with it. It's because she took it into her own hands. Because she said, you know what? I'm going to die. I'm going to, you know, he gave me the poison. And I'm going to take care of this myself. And as I go, I'm dropping two middle fingers to you and your family.
And I love that she's kind of like just before she drops that bomb, she's kind of like, hey, so this isn't going to hurt. Is this going to hurt? Is it? No? Oh, good. Hold up, dog, because I need a couple seconds right now. I'm about to drop some knowledge on your ass.
Gangsta. Oh, I loved it. Oh, I love that scene so much. I love it.
All right. Well, like I said, we're kind of wrapping up all these little smaller locations or these kind of short-term locations. So let me get your thoughts on the pretty much the greatest battle with the worst name, the loot train attack. What, even including the Battle of the Bastards, I don't know if I've ever had this sense of dread and uncertainty leading up to the actual battle in almost just about any movie, much less any episode of this series. What were you guys kind of feeling during that build up? Just before the actual like craziness started.
You took the words out of my mouth when you said build up, because that build up was impeccable. It was just so good, where you just kind of start to hear a tiny little bit of rumbling. You know it's coming.
Right.
And you just can't wait to see that dragon explode over the hills through that smoke and dust or whatever.
But there was even like a long number of seconds, I guess, that felt longer, but seconds where you hear the rumbling of the Dothraki.
Right.
And you don't see them for a while.
The screams, the screaming.
Yeah. Which, by the way, that's like the first time that happened in the series, by the way, that you don't hear an army from across the other side of a hill. Right. Finally you can hear that happen. But that moment was just so awesome. Even though I knew it was coming, as soon as you saw that dragon come in, I just wanted to pump my fist and say, let's do this. And then it was like an AC-10, just like, just taking out everything. It was great. It was just so, it was so great to see one of the dragons just do something that devastating to an army that you despise so much. Well, not necessarily the army themselves, but the people that they represented. Because you had seen them do some things with the water before and burning some boats, and that was okay. This was just straight up bombing run in the middle of right in front of Highgarden, and it was so satisfying. That was a moment where I just felt more satisfied this season than I did until the finale. Just great all around.
The battle gave us one of our great moments of like the dragon getting hit by the harpoon and everyone going, "Oh, don't you kill a dragon now." Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that was like part of the brilliance of this, because Bronn is such a lovable character, or like very likable character. I don't know about love is the right word, but he's one of my personal favorites. And I had this really conflicting feeling of don't kill that dragon, but don't kill Bronn either type of, you know, thing going on, this confusion when they're kind of, he's taking sights on the dragon and the dragon's taking sights on him. And it was just like, oh man, what's going to happen? This is, oh, loved it. What about you, Aaron?
Well, I think John, were you still talking?
I, you know what? I don't even remember anymore. Go
all
ahead.
All right. I think it was, man. And I know I'm going to say what everybody else was saying. Great battle, great ending, awful resolution. It was one of those, like, how do you mess this up? There are so many ways they could have handled, not necessarily how they ended it. I love how they ended it, minus the fact that apparently there's a cliff in the river because they're four feet from the edge and he keeps falling down into this river. Let's take that out of it. Hey, it's a movie with dragons. You got to suspend
with
some logic.
Very strong undercurrents. Let's just add that in there too.
But the next, it's got dragons, the abyss is down there. You got the aliens from the abyss rescuing Jamie.
I don't know what's going on, but the fact that they pick up the next episode and don't give any kind of plausible explanation why they are like 400 yards away, completely unnoticed, even though Tyrion obviously saw him and he knows that he survived because he set up a meeting like 5 minutes later. That whole thing was handled as it for a show I love. And I love this season. I don't love it. It's not my favorite season, but I love this season. That's an abysmal handling of characters in how they saved Jaime. It's just, don't set it up if you don't have a reasonable way to finish it off. And that's what I thought that was. We're going to have a great moment. We don't really have a way to make this pan out. So we're just going to, hey, swam all the way to the other side of the river. That'd be great if he wasn't in all that armor. And he obviously sunk to the bottom.
And he was already like 60 feet below the surface.
Yes. It just
Especially because the way they ended that episode of just that shot of him falling deeper and deeper into the water. It felt disrespectful to the audience because you can't end on a cliff note like that and then not and then him just pop up in the water.
There are so many things about it that bug me, and you know, I don't want to be poo-pooing on the show, but let's be reasonable here. They're like 400 yards away when they surface, so apparently nobody saw him the whole time. Tyrion obviously knew it was his brother. Do you not think he would be running down there to see if Jaime Lannister was okay? There's no way he doesn't do that, in my mind. And then the fact that he's in heavy armor and Bronn somehow pulls him aside to the other end of the shore with nobody seeing him when Dany's right there at the water's edge. It's just... you have so many factors. Somebody should have sat down and said, look, guys, we got a great hero moment where Jamie's going to be stupid and try to kill the queen, but we need to figure out a way to get them out of this that's more plausible, because that was a real – I mean, it was a huge – it was almost like a jumping the dragon moment. You know what I'm saying? It was really close.
Well, you know what's even worse than that is that that episode, they – as far as, you know, here's a big ploy for us. The way they ended that episode is there was no ending music. It was just a silent credits.
Yeah, like the 24 thing.
What's that?
Like 24, when they would kill off a character, you would get no music. Yeah,
exactly. Like 24 has done it. Walking Dead has done it. It's really a big ploy. And then then you find out that, oh, hey, no, he's not dead. We just did silent credits because we kind of felt like it.
I don't know if anybody that was even halfway thought that he was going to be dead the next week.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I knew people that thought he was dead. There's no way he can survive. Really? And well, because of logic.
I mean, there's a logic, a sense about it. But I mean, when you think from the aspect of going, okay, this is one of their top 3 to 5, you know, characters on the show, you're going to give him a better death than this.
I think that would have been a great death. I'll be honest with you. I thought it was a great death. He makes a last ditch charge at the queen. I thought that would have been fantastic. And then you just
say, I would
burns alive.
If to me, it would have been better if when that dragon face comes into the screen from you see Danny, the focus is on Danny, and all of a sudden, wham, here comes that dragon face and the mouth opens. You cut it right there. Now you've got an argument as far as, I don't know, and what happened to him.
And have him head his ass off the hill, like have him head over the hill or something.
Yeah, or open up the next season or the next episode with Bronn, whatever, jumping, you know, saving whatever, or just him being nuked right there. That would have been awesome. First 3 seconds of the next episode, Jaime Lannister is super charred fried chicken.
I like it.
It could have been batted by a tail across the river. Instead of the dragon doing the whole flame at him, he could have just hit him with his tail and then used him as turn it into a human skipping stone across the river.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Him and a horse just...
Yeah. That's the way you do it in more of a believable way. I mean,
the point is in about a minute, we've come up with about 3 different better resolutions. All right. Well, we're going to keep it in the South for a little bit longer while we're heading over to King's Landing. Some of the, you know, that was one of the central locations for quite a bit of the stuff that went on this season. Cersei's angst and paranoia are pretty much reaching new highs at this point. She's for the most part broken up with Jaime, her brother. Can anybody explain to me how Jaime walked out when she gave the Mountain the order to kill him? And, you know, maybe how did you guys just kind of read that scene?
You know, I don't think she was ever going to really kill any of her family. That seems to be one thing that she's not ever held true to. She may have been like blowing smoke as much as she could, but let's think about one thing. Tyrion managed to come out of that room alive. And if she was insisting on killing anyone, it would have been him, because number one, she thinks Tyrion's going to be the reason why she dies anyways. And then number two, she blames Tyrion for everything that's gone wrong. So I think Jaime just called her bluff. And that's why when he walked out of the room, he kind of like just looked at the mountain like, yeah, right, whatever. And I'm out of here. And good for him. I think that whole moment where he was like, you know what? I think we're the baddies kind of was good for him.
The way I took that scene was she never had any intention of killing him. I took it as she told the Hound, I want you to act like you're going to kill him because I want him to do that. I want him
The Mountain, not the Hound.
I'm sorry. You're right. The Mountain told him, I want you to act like you're going to do something for him because I want to push him to do what I want him to do, but don't ever actually draw your sword and make it happen. I just want to scare him she loves him. She does. As gross as it is, she loves him. And I don't think she's all about family. That's why she's pissed at Tyrion. She's not going to off her brother, the man that she loves, which is a sentence I thought I'd never say in my life.
I think she rules by intimidation. That's just what she does. And I think she just, like you guys both said, she just called his bluff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Do y'all think she's pregnant for reals?
I believe she is. I don't see what game that could be. What does that prove? What does that do? She needs an heir. She wants it to stay in the family. Like she keeps everything else in the family. So
I think she is. I definitely think she is, but I definitely think she's using it to her advantage. She definitely used Tyrion when she's like, oh, poor me. And starts rubbing her belly like, hey, hey, starts smacking her stomach. I'm pregnant. I'm pregnant. Yeah. So I think she's using it. And I think there's maybe a chance she used it to sucker Tyrion into a deal with the devil. Honestly, just saying they didn't show any more of that conversation. And it's possible.
I'm not saying she's not pregnant. However, if you remember it was either last season or the season before, there was when she was a little girl, some crazy woodland gypsy woman said, you'll only have 3 kids. So she may, she may be pregnant.
I've had this theory forever. Seriously. I've been telling people this ever since she announced she was pregnant. People, listen to me. Go by the prophecy. According to the prophecy, she's killed by her little brother. Her little brother chokes the life out or strangles the life out of her, something along those lines, right?
Yep.
Little brother knocked her up. Baby kills her. That's what I think will happen.
Oh my God. I just had that realization on tape.
I've literally told you.
Well, I had the realization before you even started telling me this.
No, but I've told you before. We've talked about it. I told you this before in a group chat, and nobody ever listens to me.
Look, I only read your instructions. I don't read the actual things you say.
Obviously.
You tell me to do something, I do it. I you tell me your thoughts, I ignore that, you know.
That's fair. That's balanced.
All right. Well, we've got this big meetup at King's Landing for the big powwow. So with all sorts of reconnections being made, Brienne and the Hound, Bronn and Tyrion and Podrick, Brienne and Jaime, and really just every combination and more. Did any of these little re-encounters kind of maybe warm your heart a little bit?
I really loved seeing Podrick, Bronn, and Tyrion all together again. That was a lot of fun. But I think what I thought was most interesting was we got our first hints that Brienne likes dudes when she laid eyes on the Hound again.
Oh, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think that was in John's world, not in the real world.
No, I totally saw. I mean, she totally eye screwed him right there in front of
him.
No, she didn't.
They were trying to kill each other. She's like, oh, crap, you're alive? I didn't see that coming.
No.
Yeah.
That was the first man. It was the first man, the number one, to give her a solid challenge. And then number two,
by punching her in the face, that equates as a solid challenge.
Well, I mean, she's beating the crap out of every single other guy. The fight the two of them had was pretty even, and it was all because he didn't pull any punches with her, and she kind of digs that.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not
crazy. This is 50 Shades of Davenport right now. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Look, just because I like getting punched in my face does not necessarily mean that I think everybody does, but I think Brienne does.
Well, I wish you were the best between with you and Conor McGregor. I wish you guys years of happiness. Oh, wow.
I'll be fine with his money.
Okay. Speaking of Brienne, though, I did love her little scene with Jaime after the event where he's walking out and this isn't about banners and flags or sigils or anything else or families or names, fuck loyalty. That whole thing was great because somebody needed to say that. I needed to hear a character say that.
And it was great. It was great coming from Brienne, who has been blindly loyal for 5 or 6 years now.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So,
and if anybody she wants to eye screw, it's Jaime Lannister. It's not
exactly. It's not Jaime Lannister. It's
not the Hound. And Tormund's going to cut you for
that. You're catching electricity between Brienne and the Hound, but you're not picking up on any electricity between Brienne and Jaime.
No, really? there's an honest respect between the two of them of great friendship. That's what exactly what's going on between the two of them.
Yeah, Danny and John have that same great respect for each other too.
Oh no, those two were destined to throw down. Those two are going to go to Pound Town no matter what anyone said.
Especially at the family reunion, it turns out.
Yeah. Hey, look, as far as that point is concerned, everyone's forgetting that they've already mentioned the Targaryens have been inbreeding for years. So it's already been a part of canon that it was always okay for the Targaryens to do it.
Yeah, wasn't Viserys going to be doing something to Dany if the Dothraki didn't get involved?
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, totally okay with it. If she was my aunt, I would totally understand. I would make. I'd be okay.
Don't even get me started. Are we gonna? Are we going there now?
No, not yet. We're not there yet. But I'm just saying. You know, you down with you down with Aunt PP? Sorry.
Wow.
Going back.
I want it on the record that a non-Southerner is okay with incest. I just want it on the record.
Yeah, it's fair. My family's
is casual.
My mom's family's from Kentucky, though, so technically I'm kind of Southern.
All right. Well, as far as this meeting goes, you know, this is really so many big people in the same in a very small location all together at the same time. Do you think maybe this meeting was a little bit kind of underwhelming, or maybe do you think it just kind of played out for the purposes of the show?
I thought it played out great. I don't understand the complaints about it being underwhelming. This is one of the most tense moments because you're seeing all these people together for the first time. It's so weird seeing some of those characters on screen together. And it was tense. You could just feel it in the air. You could cut it with a knife. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't want to see any action. We talked about that earlier, how there's been so much action this season, which I appreciated. I didn't want that action in this season outside of the reveal of the white. And I appreciated it. I'm seriously shocked. When I first read our format tonight, I was like, wow, people had a problem with that scene. Do you guys have a problem with that scene?
Nope. Loved it. I thought the meeting went great. I don't know who's saying it's underwhelming, but they're wrong. No, not your opinion is wrong. I'm
not saying anybody said it. I'm just...
Oh, it was just a question? All right. Well, then I feel bad. Everybody's right again. I just personally didn't think that it was underwhelming at all. I loved it. I thought it was great. And John's speech, already talked about that. Dany, I think, could have come across a little stronger. I thought Cersei was fantastic, the way she just looks. And she's got, like, resting bitch face of the whole meeting and the way she acts with her face. I thought it was great.
I loved the scene when the white got unlocked from its box. I felt like that was the first time the entire run of this show that I saw a look on Cersei's face where she was disturbed.
I kind of mostly agree with you, but I thought they played the delay with they set it up with the boxes bouncing around and you hear the groans and the grunts and all the stuff from the white that was trapped in there. Then the Hound carries that big ass box on his back up the steps, drops it. And it's just laying there quiet for like 30 seconds. Please. That thing should have come out on fire practically.
Yeah. I was expecting it to just pour out and the thing to either be dead or disintegrated from the heat or something like that. That's kind of what I thought they were going for.
Really? This is really a scary thing, guys. I know it's dead now and it's not moving. It's just a pile of dusty bones. But maybe, you know, the heat really affected it. We probably should have kept it colder longer. I'm sorry, but it's really scary when it's running at you with a knife and half dead pelt or dead pelts on it, you know, whatever.
Well, also when you consider that when the Hound knocked on the crate when it was on the boat, the thing went nuts and started shaking the whole boat around. So yeah. For it to be all suddenly quiet for this, it just didn't add up.
It felt like an 80s horror movie trick or something.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Everything about the meeting was great. I don't know. I loved it.
All right. Well, let's
Wait, can we talk? When do we talk about John and Dany hooking up? Well, Bran's tossing out his lineage. Is that Winterfell? When are we coming to that? I don't know. If, I didn't see that in the format, and it's important to me that we talk about it.
Okay. Well, we can get to it whenever you want. How's that? Just
okay.
Now's a good time.
Sure.
I mean, you brought it up. Why not? The door is open.
I'm just saying, let's talk about it. How do you guys feel about anti-nephew action? Is it a problem for you? Let's go around. I really want to know what everybody thinks. Do you have a problem with it? And what'd you think about them getting it on while Bran is like throwing out their lineage? I mean, he's like, hey, by the way, it's his aunt he's on top of right now, this second.
Like, we all don't know. Like, we need to be reminded that they're related at this moment. We all know.
There are some people because they didn't pay attention to Gilly, that didn't know that he was the rightful heir, though.
But that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he's screwing his aunt.
I'm fine with it for a couple of reasons. Number one, they don't know that they're related, much less aunt and nephew, however, brother, sister, for whatever reason. They don't know what's going on. Number two, we've had twins fucking for the last 7 years. So if we can handle that.
So much more gross.
If we can handle that, yeah, right. Now we're talking about levels of incest that we're happy with or not happy with. So if we can handle twins having sex for the last 7 years, then we can handle an aunt and a nephew having sex.
There's a difference between handling it and applauding it, man. There are people that are cheering this copulation happening, man. It drives me insane.
Guilty. I'm not cheering anybody. The only two people I would cheer to see hookup, thank you, hallelujah. Yes.
I was cheering it. I want to see
all them giant babies.
No, the hypocrisy of this drives me crazy, and I'm not directing this directly towards you, Aaron, because I know you were happy this happened, but everyone has just been talking for the past 7 seasons about how gross it is that Cersei and her brother are hooking up, but apparently it's okay for related people to hook up as long as they're beautiful people that they really like.
I would argue Jaime and Cersei are beautiful people, too. I mean,
they're beautiful people, but they're not. I'm talking about beautiful people and people that you are cheering for.
The beautiful people.
Yeah, this turned into a Marilyn Manson concert all of a sudden. All
right,
we're talking about despicable characters. At least when you found out that Cersei and Jaime were banging, you really despise both of them. And even though Jaime did not redeem himself for all the crap that he did, he still was a. You just don't like him. But because you love Danny and you love John, it's okay for them to go ahead and cross the streams because I just don't understand.
There's a difference, though, because Jaime and Cersei knew that they were related. They could not know because they're twins. So they're 100%
make it any less gross.
No, but I'm saying that from a perspective
it does make it much less gross because you have two people who are hooking up. Sure, they have no idea who they are to each other, with the exception of they're pretty people and everyone seems to like them. It's a huge difference when you take a look at somebody who's like, hey, you know what, we shared a womb and we know that, but we're totally okay with boning. That is a completely different issue. It's a completely different problem.
Yeah, they're sharing a womb again.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Forever and ever, till death do us part.
Right. There's a huge difference between the two of them. One is much more gross than the other one. That's hands down. You can't because you have ignorance at play with Danny and John. It is completely okay for them to be doing it at the level that it's at now. You can't compare the two because it is apples and oranges. It really is. Also, I said it before, I'm going to repeat it. At the beginning of the show, they talked about how Targaryens inbred all the time already. So it's already a thing that Targaryens do.
They're also raping children all the time, too, but that doesn't make it okay.
But again, that's under the assumption they know what they're doing. They don't know that they are related.
Right.
So it's hard to... It's not equatable, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you can't make the Targaryens were... You can't make that argument this season.
Yeah.
No, I mean you can't, but but for people to be getting all up in arms about it, I mean, Scott, I appreciate your argument against it. However, I don't agree with it because the argument would insist that that all four people are aware of the relationship they have with one another for it to be gross. That's what the act.
I understand that aspect of it. I understand that they don't know they're related. So they're quote unquote innocent of their sin is what is the point you're getting across.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a sin. And what drives it doesn't drive me crazy so much that it happened, but that people are just like all excited about it. That yes, this is happening. This is great. The audience knows they're related, guys.
And they're rooting for it.
They're rooting for
just,
it.
Versus just accepting it.
Well, right. Do you think that could it have a lot to do with the fact that the audience is already aware that they have no idea that this couple has no idea who they are to each other? So what's the point of going, ooh, that's gross? It's just going to take away from the story.
That's where I kind of agree with Scott. It's about she's pretty. He's pretty. We've been fans for 7 years now. No, we're excited to see them get together. That's what it's about. It is. No, there is a certain level of hypocrisy there that I have to agree with Scott.
That's not my only reason, though. No. Yeah, I agree. Daenerys is very attractive, and I don't blame John at all. John, if you're listening, I don't blame you at all, Kit. I don't. But I also think it's a great story element because you have John, who is very noble. Once he finds out, what will he do? You have Dany, who wants this throne, and now we'll possibly at some time find out that she's not actually the rightful heir, that it's actually him.
Yeah, that's the part that intrigues me. Yep.
Those mm-hmm. story elements are
first,
exciting.
Their first fight as a married couple.
Ha!
They ain't getting married. I think there's going to be a lot of shenanigans going on in the next season, and I think that's part of it. I see what you're saying, but I don't know, man. It is like a matter of what level of incest are you comfortable with, and I guess so I'm more comfortable with than I am twins.
Let me ask you this question. Let's say the Hound hooks up with Lady Mormont, but he doesn't know that she's 14 years old. He doesn't know, so he doesn't know he's doing anything wrong. Are we okay with that?
Oh, we're not having those conversations here, my friend. No.
Nope, that doesn't count.
Yep.
Flag
on the play.
Redo. Played it down over. Yep. Sorry.
Play's dead.
Just saying.
No. Nope.
The point you're making is that they don't know they're doing something wrong. Nope. So it's,
she looks like she's 10 years old. Sorry. Yep.
That nope. point does not exist.
Nope. You almost had me till.
No. Till you made a bad
all right,
call.
So let me ask you another question about this whole scene because I know we're all obsessed with the fact that they did get together and hooked up. But one part of that whole scene that really intrigued me was Tyrion
mm-hmm.
kind of down the hallway, staring down the hallway with this grim look on his face. Like, what's going through his head? Because all I'm thinking is he knows.
Yep.
I don't know how.
If Jorah is Sir Friendzone, Tyrion is Lord Friendzone.
Yep.
I don't think there's a jealousy aspect though.
Cool.
This is the other thing I keep yelling. He sent Jorah away, or he convinced Dany to send Jorah away. He convinced Dany to leave Dario back in Meereen. And he had no problem saying, hey, let's have this stupid white hunt. And John, why don't you go lead that bad boy, huh? All right.
He also told her that he's not the only one that'll love you. Or that will fall in love with you. Something along those lines of basically insinuating that other people, hint, hint, big, bright, flashing arrows pointing at me, will love you too.
I don't know, man.
Just saying, I got that vibe from him last season. And that final thing, you know, I noticed when he sent Dario away, or when he kept Dario there, he suggested it. And then he suggested Jorah go a couple times. I get that vibe that he's got a thing for her. And then, you know, Cersei said the same thing. She seems like your kind of woman. I mean, there's several things that lead me to think.
What isn't maybe his kind of woman?
She's more than that. I think there's certain things that are leading me to think that there's more to what. Because you can remember, Tyrion is a darker character, even though he hasn't done much that made sense the last couple of seasons.
I don't know. I think there's something else going on. I think there's that just seems too easy to me that he's just got a thing for her now and jealous. So there's like a triangle going on here between John and Tyrion and Mormont, Jorah.
I think Jorah pretty much knows his place at this point.
Right.
And I don't think I think he's just accepted his role as, you know what? I love her. I told her I love her. She's kicked me out. She's accepted me back a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm her guy.
Yeah, now, his sigil is an F with a line through it.
Right. So Jorah knows his role at this point with her. There's no breaking out of that friend zone. Tyrion has just entered the friend zone, and he's dealing with the realization that, yeah, the wee man ain't going to happen for him.
Now, Scott, to your point, there could be a possibility, and this is probably what I think most people feel, is that it's more of him being upset that he put all his faith and belief in her, and then she's going to chance to throw it away for the King of the North. That could be what he's thinking as well.
That makes more sense to me.
I could see that more. You don't stare at their bedroom door for like 30 seconds because of feeling that you think she's going to throw it away for the brooding type.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, you know, the other thing is that he has been pretty proud of the fact that he gets her to listen to him and listen to reason. And for all of a sudden, here comes John, who is a bigger, brighter beam of beacon of hope and reason than he is. So it gives him like a feel, possibly gives him a feeling of lost power there, because she's going to be looking at John for his counsel more than Tyrion's.
Right. That I can see. That I can see.
I can see that, but I still think he's in love and he knows that he ain't going to be hitting it.
Yeah. I'm looking at that look going, he's sitting there going, there's about 7 inches of snow in that room and I'm not part of it. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
That's right.
You stand accused of murder. You stand accused of treason. How do you answer these charges? Lord Baelish.
My sister asked you a question.
Lady Sansa, forgive me. I'm a bit confused.
Which charges confuse you? Let's start with the simplest one. You murdered our aunt, Lysa Arryn. You pushed her through the moon door and watched her fall. Do you deny it?
I did it to protect you.
You did it to take power in the Vale. Earlier, you conspired to murder John Arryn. You gave Lysa Tears of Lys to poison him. Do you deny it?
Whatever your aunt might have told you, she was a troubled woman. She imagined enemies everywhere.
You had Aunt Lysa send a letter to our parents telling them it was the Lannisters who murdered Jon Arryn, when really it was you. The conflict between the Starks and the Lannisters, it was you who started it. Do you deny it?
I know of no such letter.
You conspired with Cersei Lannister and Joffrey Baratheon to betray our father, Ned Stark. Thanks to your treachery, he was imprisoned and later executed on false charges of treason. Do you deny it?
I deny it. None of you were there to see what happened. None of you knows the truth.
You held a knife to his throat. You said, I did warn you not to trust me.
You told our mother this knife belonged to Tyrion Lannister. But that was another one of your lies. It was yours.
Lady Sansa, I have known you since you were a girl. I've protected you.
Protected me? By selling me to the Boltons?
If we could speak alone, I can explain everything.
Sometimes when I'm trying to understand a person's motives, I play a little game. I assume the worst. What's the worst reason you have for turning me against my sister? That's what you do, isn't it? That's what you've always done. Turn family against family, turn sister against sister. That's what you did to our mother and Aunt Lysa, and that's what you tried to do to us.
Sansa, please.
I'm a slow learner. It's true. But I learn.
All right, well, speaking of cold places, let's go to, we're talking about Winterfell, the Wall, Beyond the Wall. Things are getting a little bit colder. Can I get a decent explanation on why Bran is all of a sudden so damn emo? I know he's the third eye, the three-eyed raven and all that stuff, but when he was with Benjen, he was all Branish and kind of confused. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, he's still more Bran than stoic three-eyed raven. All of a sudden he shows up to Winterfell and he's an asshole.
don't know. He's kind of like Iron Fist, who's ready to tell anyone who will listen that he's the Iron Fist. But in this case, he's like the three-eyed raven. You know, it comes to an explanation of he may know that he has a responsibility to be the three-eyed raven and to be impartial, but at the same time, he's still a kid and he wants to save his family. So I think that's why one of the first actions he takes as a three-eyed raven with his family is to completely destroy any credibility that Peter Baelish has. So I think he's kind of wrestling with that knowledge that he has, where he can go anywhere and see anything he wants in the present and in the past. And he may have to just wrestle with that. Because I would imagine, because you see a lot of characters like this that try to be impartial. They try to be separate from the world because they know that this whatever strengths they provide is just unfair. So I think I can totally see that that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to separate himself from everybody else because he knows what kind of scales he can tip. Knowledge is power.
I don't know, man. He's coming across more condescending to me because every time he talks to somebody, the only explanation he gives is, "I'm the three-eyed raven." And what does everybody say? I don't know what that means, dude. And then he doesn't physically do it, but you could just see in his eyes that he's like sighing and never explains it.
Yeah, he's like that douchebag kid that comes back from college who spent a freaking semester in some socioeconomic class who thinks he knows everything and he talks down to everybody.
Right. And he's the one that he's kind of the linchpin of this whole story right now. He could fix everything with a single or two ravens. And where's that raven? Why are you not getting word to John? Why are you not getting word to anybody? you know information that will change everything. Is there some reason why he's keeping that?
I heard this, and I have to credit. I wish I could remember the other. There was an episode recap or an episode Game of Thrones podcast that I heard this, and I wish I could, because I would give it all the credit. I wish this is not my observation. I'm totally stealing this or just repeating it.
That's an homage. But
somebody used the analogy that Bran is the internet, and Sam, who just arrives at Winterfell, and they're kind of comparing notes. Sam is Google. So
I love that.
Bran like knows everything, but can't focus on what, you know, there's so much out there. You can't, there's too many choices. I can't really focus on anything. Sam is kind of like, okay, how about searching for this? So Sam is kind of the funnel. Mm.
So, I'll buy that.
Yeah, but and I also think if you saw your brother having sex with his aunt, you'd be a little weirded out too, right? And he sees everything.
That didn't affect him until he became the three-eyed raven.
I don't know.
What, I mean,
I think it's just he's in a weird space. I mean, he's basically seen everything. He knows what's coming. He knows what has happened, and it's. I mean, I would think that would take a toll on someone.
Yeah.
What about? I cannot remember the character's name, but the one that was Jogen's sister.
Mm-hmm. What? Mira Reed.
Mira. Yeah,
basically the last one standing that got him to Winterfell.
And then he just brushed her off like nothing. Was that right? Was he protecting her, or was he just being a condescending douche?
Just a douche.
I don't think he was being a douche. He was just, man, that's just where his state of mind is right now. Can't a brother just take a nap? God, why is he always
no, but this is the
it's transition. Like when you come home and you want to like just sit down and watch some TV and
yeah, you're right, he had a long walk home
and your wife,
yeah, because he did a whole lot of work getting, yeah, exactly, Scott, like Scott said, he did a whole lot of work getting back because, you know, she carried his ass the whole way. He made a transition from Bran to the three-eyed raven at some point. When we see him with Benjen, he still appeared to be more Bran. All of a sudden he shows up to Winterfell and he's this whatever emo kid that can't talk to anybody.
Well, what do you guys think of all this? Like, a lot of people are saying that Bran is the Night King, and the White Walkers at the end of the finale form the Stark sigil, and it does kind of look at it. But they also said that with the blood when Jon Snow was stabbed. But what do you think about this, that he could be the Night King? Some theories are saying or proposing the idea that Bran basically wargs into the Night King at some point and gets stuck there. So actually it's his mind is stuck in the Night King, and that's why he's so empty right now.
Well, I kind of have a hard time believing that if that were the case and he were the Night King in Winterfell, that he's not going to stop from doing anything right away. Like
yeah, it's a weird theory, but I didn't want to ignore it. I mean, it's a weird theory. I agree.
That's out there, but
yeah, I saw that also, and also they show that they're actually wearing similar outfits, so that kind of leads or kind of helps that theory a little bit. Interesting. I don't, because I guess the basic premise is that he went back in time to work into the guy that would become the Night King and tries to stop it, but he gets stuck as the Night King. But if that was the case, I'm just kind of, my brain's cramping even kind of thinking that the timeline, you know, time space continuum thing here. But if he goes that far, because you go that far back, now you're talking about the children of the Woodlands or the North or whatever they were that created the White Walkers. That was almost like before man. So how was he born later if he was trapped as the Night Kings, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago? So
he can warg into the past, and they have shown. Now I do want to go to their point, to go to this theory's point. The show has gone to great lengths to demonstrate that Bran can affect the past, because he specifically did that in two instances. So he has affected the past when he has gone back. So in theory, that could come to pass, that he could go in the past and be stuck there in the Night King's body or something like that. Or the theory is that he goes back to before he's become the Night King to try and talk them out of it or change something. And he ends up stuck in that body once they make him the Night King. That's the theory.
Right. Yeah, and my point is that was like hundreds or thousands of years before Bran himself was even born. So,
but Bran would still be in this particular moment. He just goes back to that moment in his mind. So he would have to get, logically it makes sense if you look at it that way.
Holy shit. My brain hurts.
So I'm going to go with, I'm just going to go with no, I don't think
he affected Ned Stark. He affected Ned Stark. Like Ned Stark heard him even though he wasn't born yet.
Right.
That happened. I'm not disputing that.
Hodor.
Dragons. There's always kinds of things that, trust me, they can make it work if they really want to. And I think that would be a cool idea. I'm not saying it's there, but it's possible. I mean,
Scuba Jaime Lannister.
Exactly. They can make anything happen. You can swim 1,000 yards with metal on. Yeah, I just exaggerated it to 1,000.
So what is Bran's motivation for killing everybody, all the living people?
He can't walk.
I don't know the motivation. I just asked what you guys thought about the theory. That's all.
So it's an interesting theory. And of course, like a lot of these ones that gain a lot of ground, there is some plausibility to it. I'm kind of hoping that's not the case, but that's just me, you know, which of course that means that'll be the 100% truth. Probably. All right. Let's keep moving on. We still got a little bit to do here. Mm-hmm. Finally, somebody gets what they deserve, and that somebody is Littlefinger. How sweet was his death?
Awesome. It was so good. Scott already talked about it, or John, I don't remember who mentioned it, but that
we all did at one point. Yeah,
that move he makes, like when, you know, Sansa does that whole thing where she's like, Lord Baelish, and Arya is giving the little smirk, and he's just like, what? Oh, shit. What? What?
Whoa.
Slow your roll. Let's talk about it. And then he begs, and you see a side of him you haven't seen before. I wasn't shocked that they pulled that, because it's a funny thing. Everybody on the internet was saying that's exactly what was happening. So, of course, I'm like, well, I'm saying it's the opposite. I'm saying that maybe there's a chance that Sansa and Arya are going to end up trying to kill each other and a sister accidentally dies, because that felt like a George R. R. Martin kind of thing. And then it turns out the internet was correct. So I was surprised, even though I wasn't really surprised, but I was shocked they didn't kill him, or that they did kill him, because I thought they would imprison him or keep him for leverage or something. But because this has a lot of, I would think, fallout from the Vale and other things.
Well, the Knights of the Vale were on their side. The Knights of the Vale were there.
Yeah, but his little nephew or whatever the hell he is might not be.
He's still around.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where is he at? Because he was missing targets with a bow and arrow and tripping over swords last I saw, but I don't remember
He got that Falcon, and that was the last time I remember seeing him.
He's back in the veil, tossing people out that moon door. That's what he's doing. Yeah, that's what he's doing. I'm glad he went out like a sniveling bitch, because he was. And great performance, too.
Here's my question with that whole thing, though, because that really was the only drama that was going on in Winterfell outside of, you know, the walkers and everything. So what happens, what takes place in Winterfell at that point? Are they going to join up with Jon with all these other people to head north and fight the walkers? Or,
well, Danny and Jon are on their way to Winterfell right now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sam just showed up. You know, he had a little bit of a head start. And yeah, I think Jon and Danny and crew kind of with the possibly, I guess, the Lannisters too, for that matter. I guess Jaime's on his way flying solo. Yeah.
Man, I can't wait to see what happens with him. If he joins up with them or what, that's going to be.
Ooh. Yeah. Because if you notice, he didn't have any of his Lannister armor on. He was just leathered up, not lathered up, but leathered up.
I just want to see the family.
Slight difference.
The family conversations they're going to have when everybody gets there. And like, Danny, Jon, you guys are going to need to sit down for a little bit. We got to have a talk. And this is a family conversation. Should Danny be here? Turns out she should. So,
yeah.
Bran's got something to tell you.
All right. Well, Sansa and Arya have formed a pretty badass duo. One learned observation and manipulation skills from the master, or really maybe a couple of masters, while the other is pretty much a trained ninja. So who in her right mind would mess with the North at this point?
Yeah, pretty much nobody. She's got the ability to switch faces. Sansa is, like, she called herself a slow learner, but she learns, and she's learning. Especially when Danny and Jon get there, I mean, they're a formidable force at this point. I mean, the only enemies now are Cersei and the White Walkers, and it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, because, you know, Cersei is going against her word. The North is obviously obsessed with fighting the White Walkers. I don't know how Sansa and Arya play into that, because I don't envision either of them on the battlefield unless they're watching from horseback behind them. They're more on the manipulation side and the sneaking around side. So, and there's none of that going to be happening with White Walkers.
Can I just point out that Littlefinger is the one person that could meet with Cersei pretty easily? His face could get in there pretty quick.
Oh, that's a thought. Did they save his face?
Well, every time we've seen her kill somebody, she's cut their throat, and then we see her wearing the face later. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point, because that goes with when we were talking about Littlefinger before, how much I was kind of sad to see him go. That may be the way they still get to see him again. That thought never crossed my mind until you just said it. That's yep. Fantastic.
Good observation. And that's another thing I love about this show, is that somebody inevitably picks up something that you don't. And I didn't think about that. That's awesome. So pretty much, was this trip to grab a White Walker the dumbest plan in Westeros history?
I mean, it's dumb from there. It wasn't much of a plan. Let's be honest. It was just, let's just go out there and see what we can find. I mean, I love the idea of that many guys going just to bring back one being with them. But yeah, it was pretty dumb. But man, what an awesome scene that was. Them in the middle of that island, surrounded by these White Walkers everywhere, just so ominous. And I really enjoyed that scene, although the time thing might have messed with me a little bit there, because how fast did that dude run back to the wall? Like, I felt
he was sprinting. He was running a marathon under what, like 5 minutes or something.
It took them like three quarters of the episode to get to where they were. And all of a sudden, like that, he's there.
Yeah, in the snow. We're from the Midwest, Scott and I. And let me tell you, no, you can't make it that fast. If you really have to think about it, no, you can't. But who cares?
Pretty much.
I want to point out the chain thing, because people keep bringing up, well, where'd they get all these chains to bring the dragon out? And all that jive. Look, man, I don't care. You believe in dragons, but you have a problem wondering whether, like, if there's a Home Depot nearby. I don't quite understand the
logic. You're okay with zombie polar bears and zombie giants and flying dragons that breathe fire, but all of a sudden you just can't conceive the fact that maybe these guys have some giant chains to pull the dragon out. And that they might have taken these chains off of some of these abandoned forts and keeps and all this other stuff that's north of the wall. So
exactly.
Right. So I, my issue was, I think I can kind of even deal with the stupid plan, because it was a very stupid plan. You have seven or eight of your, like, your best fighters in all of Westeros all going on this stupid mission. And then all of a sudden, you end the episode with seven guys walking out going, hurrah, here we go. And then you open the next episode with, I don't know, how many of them were there? 15? 30? You had the same seven. Then you had a bunch of red shirts that at 1 minute looks like you've only got the seven. Maybe they've increased to 10. But then there's all these people that keep dying. And you, in this battle, you don't know who's who. Except top knot guy finally dies. And you're like, okay. I couldn't tell who. It was like watching Transformers fight. I can't tell who's who.
Pretty much.
Oh, who just died? Was that John? No.
Yeah, I didn't know whether to feel sad or.
Where did that guy come from?
Yeah, exactly. There's four people on a rock in the middle of a frozen lake. How do all these people keep dying? And yet the four people I know are still alive.
Okay. Right.
That's an excellent point. Back to the chains. This is very important. People keep saying, it doesn't make sense. The walkers can't swim. How could they tie it up to the dragon? They were all the zombies underwater already at the bottom. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
They don't have to swim. They just need to sink and then walk their way out.
Exactly. All those chains that they just picked up at the Home Depot, they drop them down, tie them up, ice dragon.
Right. Instant ice dragon.
Speaking of the top knot guy, can we talk a minute about how badass Beric is with that flaming sword? Every time that, he just like lights that thing up.
That may be the single like best shot of the whole, that 1 second thing where he just goes woo,
like, and it lights it up
like a lightsaber, man. It just zoom. That's like the shot of the season.
It really is.
Although the flaming swords didn't seem to do anything other than just be swords.
Well, they were fighting White Walkers. Fire, they killed with fire.
Yeah, fire kills White Walkers, so it helps.
Well, I mean, it still took a couple of whacks to kill him with a flaming sword.
Well, things don't burn instantly, man. They're not being vaporized.
Why didn't they use them to keep warm? That's the bigger question.
Lord of Light wants them to be cold, man.
You got a furnace with you. Just light that sucker up. Let's go.
See?
Can I ask this is a sincere question. Do you guys think that that was part of the plan? Because we get the indication that the Night King does have a power similar to Bran. If it's not Bran, that he has a power similar to Bran because he kicks Bran out when he's warging into the birds, right? So
right.
Is it possible that this was part of his entire plan? That's why they've been moving so slow. They had to get to the point where they could lure them to the north with the dragon because they needed the dragon to break down the wall to get through.
I don't know. If that were the case, don't you think he would aim for the non-moving dragon instead of the one that was a moving target?
No, because that was not in the script, Scott.
My theory on how they got past the wall was, well, it had more to do with Bran. You know, when Bran was warging and the Night King touched him, that allowed them access inside that magic cave. So the Benjen he made the comment, I cannot go past the wall because it's protected with magic. Sure, it's 800 feet tall. Sure, it's super thick and all this other stuff, but it's also protected with magic. That's what keeps people like me out of here. Okay, fair enough. So I thought once Bran crossed through the wall,
he
would wipe out the magic and therefore just basically opening the door for the White Walkers.
That was
how I thought they would be coming through. So that was kind of what I was expecting with all that.
Okay. That also makes sense why they hadn't gone through yet. So,
right.
Okay. Right. All right. I still want to, like, they obviously needed the dragon to get through a little faster. Because once that blue fire starts shooting out.
Yeah. We just need the dragon to open up a big enough hole so we can get these 100,000+ zombies. And, you know, going through one little tunnel, that would take way. That's not nearly as dramatic, I guess.
Guys, let's go around. Let's go single file.
Excuse me. Sorry. It's tight in here. I'm sorry, man. I can't go anywhere.
I thought this is what they were doing. I thought they would get to the end of the wall and they would just like each go around a corner or something at the very edge. But like, nah, we're just going to go through. We got a dragon now. Mm-hmm. We're cool.
Change of plans, guys. Change of plans. Oh, man. All right. Well, I mean, what do you think about the season finale overall, though? I mean, this is just kind of no real specific questions here. Just this was, for me personally, this was one of the best season finales ever of any series. This was shocking. I spoke to the TV more than once.
I agree with you, because in the history of the show, I feel like the ninth episode or the second to last episode was always the strongest.
And the 10th kind of set up the following season in a way.
Correct. You know? This felt like a finale more than any other finale to me. And it might have been because it was a little longer, but there were so many things that happened and felt like great payoffs. And you saw great things with characters, and you saw people meeting each other that had never met each other, or you didn't see on screen very long together. It was fantastic all around.
I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like having the penultimate episode and the finale all wrapped up into one, where you get your big scary moment, and on top of that, you get some place setting for the next season. So I really enjoyed that. Do I think it was the best finale? Yeah, I kind of think it. I think it really was, because like most finales are just a setup, and the setup is fine, and it's a nice way to breathe at the end of the season. But I liked having the nice mix to it.
I would say it was a really damn good finale. I thought I would say it was great. And I keep telling people, it's probably the most predictable season finale I've had in a long time, like where I pretty much knew everything that was happening. But I didn't care. It was great. It was just absolutely great. I don't know if it's the best one, because I think it's too soon. Let's let the series play out, and then we'll see where we're at. But I think it's up there, put it that way.
I didn't really have this on the format, guys. But there has been a lot of talk about, I guess it's got kind of to do with the pacing and everything, but is it becoming too predictable? Is there a difference? You know, there's articles recently about, well, this is not the same Game of Thrones anymore. This is different. My personal take on it is, you know, with the first few seasons, especially, there were so many characters, so many locations, so many storylines, subplots going on, that you can still go back and watch them today, and they are so deep that you pick up on things that you missed before. At this point, everything is whittled down. Everything is, you know, this is what all of these years are being built for.
Well, the characters are whittled down too, man. I mean,
that's what Martin. I mean, this is the sheer number of characters is whittled down. You know, we're probably down to about a third to, you know, at maybe half at the most of what we've had in the past. I'm fine with this. I don't know what the big gripe is. This is what we've been working. This is what we've endured, these slow episodes and these, well, I don't know about this season. It was a little slow overall. It had some good points, but for the most part, it was just a bunch of people talking and walking. To me, this is what we've been building for. And I don't know what, do you guys see it that way?
I'm with you, man. You don't feel like there's a little bit that the showrunner, it almost feels that they are losing sight of the finer details as they race toward the end of their own timetable. I do think that's a legitimate complaint. I'm not saying it makes the show bad, but I do feel like it's a little bit rushed.
I'll take that over stretching it out more than it needs to, like most TV shows do.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I feel like they have, you know what? We said we're going to do 13. That's all we're going to do. We're going to have 13 episodes till the end, and they're not willing to budge. And I respect that to a degree, but I also think that maybe they didn't take into account, well, there's a lot of stuff we got to flesh out. I don't know. I think there's some almost finer detail.
Kind of maybe like, well, it's kind of almost like somebody's bored with like they're ready to get something done and just like, you know what? I just want to get through this and finish it off and then go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the point that you're making. I feel that way also, but I also kind of feel that, I guess, I don't know, for me, it's a little easy. I can overlook it a little bit that, yeah, okay, it feels rushed. It's a little bit faster pace and all that stuff. But to me, I just kind of look at it that we're getting, I guess, bottlenecked or something. We're getting rid of all this. We're getting rid of all these people, all these subplots, all these side stories. And we're down to the last few. You know, we're in the quarterfinals of a tournament, so to speak.
I understand that. I feel like if you really look at it, and I've rewatched the show just recently, right? You can definitely tell where they ran out of George R. R. Martin's work. Like where the books have stopped and his...
And we're going to get to that in
defined books
pretty much next.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I'm just saying, you can definitely tell that the change in creative direction has gone from Martin to the showrunners. You can definitely tell that because the pacing has changed. How the stories are told has changed a little bit. It's not as finely detailed. There are a few extra dumb plot developments. Why is Tyrion still the Hand of the Queen? I don't understand. Love Tyrion, but he's done nothing but ruin her rule since he took over. He hasn't really gave her any benefit. I don't understand why he's still there. Zero positive results, in my opinion. So, I mean, there are some plot things that I think wouldn't have happened if Martin's giant manuscript Bible was done and they could just follow that. So I don't know. I think they're rushing a little too much. I do see legitimacy in those complaints.
There may be some legitimacy to those complaints, but this is to me one of those things where it's half one way, half dozen one way, six the other, because you're going to get people who are going to be upset at the fact that it's more of the same. We're wrapping up the series and we're just getting more of the same that we've gotten in the last few seasons. And then you're going to get people who are going to get upset about the fact that they're going too fast or they're trying to wrap up things or they're playing maybe too much fan service and letting our heroes win for once. I am happier with what we're getting because I'm finding a way to at least feel some joy while watching the show versus being annoyed and having the same sort of effect that The Walking Dead had on me. So I'm much better off with the way the show is right now. I want them to give me a big payoff, treat me nice, pet my hair, call me a sweet nickname. That's what the show is doing right now, and I'm okay with that.
Really in the same vein here, just kind of extending it out a little bit. Do you think the writers, producers, Benioff and Weiss, do you think those guys are better at creating or adapting? You know, are they better at adapting the source material that was already laid out, or are they better at creating the new material? Because that's where we're at this point. It's pretty much all whatever we're seeing and hearing at this point is all from the producers and the creators of the show. So,
man, I'll be honest. I think they're nailing set pieces. I think there's a lot of set pieces that are very, very cool. And I'm not going to say that they're lesser at creating. I don't think they're as strong at it as Martin is. And I think it's obvious to me personally. That's my personal opinion. I don't think they are as character focused now as they are finish it out focused. And there are some points that are just flying by the wayside, and it's noticeable. Not enough to like make me dislike the show or poo-poo the show, but I think it's obvious to me. I think they're better at adapting than they are creating, to answer your question.
It's hard for me to answer as a person that hasn't read the books, because I don't know how well they adapted the book. I don't know what's different about it. All I know is I'm looking at the show as a whole, and I love what they're doing. I love what they did adapt, and I love what they're creating. And that's where it begins and ends for me.
I agree with both. I like what they're doing, but I do think that they're better at adapting. It's just the show doesn't have exactly the same voice to it as it had before, but I don't think that's a bad thing for the show, because I think it needs a change as we're wrapping things up.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as far as I think they're better adapters. I think they miss some of the nuances that Martin probably conveys in his storytelling, and probably his input from trying to explain, okay, this is what I am doing here in this spot, you know. So, I kind of agree. You can definitely tell a little bit of a difference there.
A little bit. We did six seasons in seven episodes this year, I think, compared to how the show was like the first five. It's very fast.
No need to get violent. No need to get violent there.
I will throw an ice spear at your ass. I swear to God I will.
All right. Well, it wasn't all television gold, especially judging by Aaron's reaction just a second ago.
I love the show. My God, I love it.
Stop employing the show, Aaron.
I know. Yeah, stop having legitimate criticism.
My God.
I must hate it. Jeez. Oh, I hate everything about it.
Why are you even going to bother like watching next season?
So. Why are you even here, Aaron? Jesus.
Somebody's got to record. Shut up, John.
No, I'm sorry. What? I think I went too far.
So again, it wasn't all television gold. So what were maybe one or two things that irritated you, maybe took you out of the moment, or even just made you kind of ask, you know, what the hell, Scott?
I mean, it's the one we've talked about already. I had down here the Jamie surviving. That tease of that cliffhanger of that episode, we deserve more explanation of that. It just really bothered me. That was the only real big one I had is how did he survive? And when they came up for air and gasped for air, like they swam the entire way, there's no way he was coming up for air and every once in a while, and then the water being just completely still when they come out of it. The insinuation was that they swam that entire way underwater in suits of armor and made it, and that was just
and you can barely see the smoke rising in the background.
Yeah,
correct.
Right. Very far. Like Tiger Woods couldn't hit a drive that far. It was very far.
But that Night King could throw a javelin that far, I bet.
Yeah, he could. Yeah. Hey, they're athletes.
That touches on the thing that aggravates me the most about the season, which was you shoot a dragon with a spear from a catapult by what looked like damn near point blank range. The dragon's okay. It's merely a flesh wound. It's cool. But the Night King throws an ice spear from miles and miles and miles away, and not only is it like a hit, but it's like blood and guts just spilling out everywhere. It's a horrific 10-minute long crash to the ground. Granted, okay, fine, magic, quote unquote, is why that happened. But dumb.
Yeah, I'm not with you on that one. I thought it was great.
Fine, be that way.
I got one. Obviously, we talked about the white plot. That was just dumb. But when Bran is all like, I know everything. And Sam's like, did you know they were married? And Bran's like, what? That one was a big
one. Didn't see that one coming, did you, buddy?
Yeah.
And why does he also ask who's at the door?
Yeah. Who's there? Don't you know?
Who's it?
Well, I guess he can't know everything.
He's just being polite at that point.
See, again, I think that kind of goes back to the Bran's the internet and Sam's the Google type of little analogy. He picked up on some things, but maybe specifics he could do a little bit better search.
I feel like the married thing would be more specific. I would follow that a little more.
I hear you.
Okay.
I like the idea of Sam being Cerebro. like he's the thing that Bran's got to tap into to be able to figure out what's going on.
My other one that what the hell is Tyrion's character the entire season. I don't know what they did, but at some point they neutered a great character and have made him almost just a boob, just a dim bulb. I mean, every plan he comes up with is not smart. Even this one with Cersei, the whole thing didn't work out at all. So basically Dany did lose a dragon for nothing. It's just, at this point, why is he still Hand of the Queen? That's a real big what the hell for me.
Kind of agree with you on that. I'm okay with him dying at this point.
Yep, so am I.
A few years ago, probably not as, you know, he keeps messing up or he keeps making bad calls, bad decisions, bad recommendations. At the least, he should be fired. So, if not killed.
And here's my big question, okay, for the characters. Because historically, Tyrion has been one of the smartest characters on the show. Would you agree?
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
yeah, sure.
And one of the most strategic on the show. Yet he continues to make bad decisions. Now, don't get me wrong. I realize that Cersei is probably more conniving than he is. But this whole thing, the fact that nobody is really triple or quadruple guessing Cersei's loyalty or belief that she will come through, the belief that she will go through with this, is astounding to me. Absolutely astounding to me. It's like, I wouldn't believe a single word that woman said. I would be keeping. And like, I would tell everybody in my army, if you see a soldier make one tiny misstep, you kill all of them. Because I just don't get how they could just take it. Okay, well, she came back to the table, so I guess she's cool with it now.
Yeah, because they don't know what the conversation was. We don't know what the conversation was.
No, I'm still saying that baby could have played a part. Maybe he made a deal with the devil.
No, I don't think he made any deal with Cersei at this point. It's especially once he finds out that Jaime left her side, he's going to be like, you know what? No, if Jamie's bailing, then I sure as hell ain't going to stick around with her.
Okay, then why didn't people question that more? Why do they feel so, well, she came back, she said she's in, we're good? It just didn't.
And nobody asked him and said, so what'd you say? What happened? How'd that conversation go? They just went on their merry way.
I would have been like, how do we make sure we keep them in check?
I just chalk it up to the fast pace of this season.
That's just what I mean. You're losing character moments. Moments that we need to make sense of other moments. Sure. That's the only downside to it.
Well, all right.
Like, where did he swim to under all that water for 400 yards? That could be a whole episode in itself.
Oh, yeah. He meets Aquaman.
That would be Jason Momoa.
Drago's under back water. To Jason Momoa, don't we?
It all leads back to Momoa.
Just real quick, because we kind of spent a little time on this. For me, it was the amount of people that went north of the wall on that stupid mission. One second, it looks like it's only the seven. Another second, it looks like there's only four or five of them. People are constantly dying. You see a faraway shot. You can't tell anybody. It looks like, oh, well, geez, all right, there might be 10 of them. Oh, wait, no. But then all these people are dying in the battle, but none of them are any. The only one of them was at any importance. They were just there they were the red shirts from Star Trek, you know? You got Kirk, you got Spock, and you got Science Officer Number 1 and Science Officer Number 2. You know those guys ain't making it off that planet.
Right.
So that whole thing could have been done better. Although that conversation between Tormund and the Hound was fantastic. But okay, so moving on, which character for you guys has had the best evolution over the course of their time on the show? And I'm talking about the complete series, not just this season, but from wherever they first started to the end of this season.
This question feels like who's the most improved. You know, like you get that award in school, like who's come along the way the most?
Yeah, kind of in a way it is.
Hmm? So who's Aaron, me? Sansa. Sansa is mine.
That's mine too.
Yeah, from go rewatch the first episode, which I just did not too long ago. She is still the character that has changed the absolute most. I know a lot of people think Arya, but Arya's always had that rough and tumble tomboyishness. And
exactly.
Sansa was this pretty little girl who wanted to be a princess and play with her dolls, and now she's her mother. I mean, she has really morphed into her mother. And I absolutely think she is the character that has gone the furthest. Jon Snow is exactly the same, except he died a couple times or something. But Sansa has really changed.
Mm. He learned how to use the Lord's tongue or whatever it is, the Lord's kiss. Jesus. So there's that. That's a pretty big evolution.
John. Oh my God!
What just John, happened? What about you there, buddy?
My favorite evolution was the one that the Hound made. I mean, he started out the show being really despicable and just, you know, and just not being an easy character to like. Sure, he said some cool stuff every now and again, but he still wasn't very likable and really fun to be around. But now look at him. He's like seconds away from becoming a full fledged hero for the series. It really is. I mean, sure, he still has that attitude of his, but his motivations are completely different, where he's believing in a god and wanting to do something for God, or because the god is showing him what's coming. It's kind of nice to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Hound also. Sansa actually was my inspiration for this question, because like Aaron, you said, I mean, just seeing her, how all she really cared about was, I just want to marry Joffrey. And I hated her for 2 years because she annoyed the hell out of me. But to see her grow is fantastic. But with the Hound, every season you saw a small glimpse of maybe this guy's got a good little bit of a nature. Even in season one, you see a look or a pause even that would give you this hint that there might be something better under this hateful person that's worth saving. And over the years, that hard exterior has just kind of been chipped away. And part of that's due to Arya. Part of that's due to Sansa. Part of that is due to his time with who's Swearingen. What's his name?
Ian McShane,
exactly. I mean, all these other people, you know, and so many others in his time have basically chipped away. Even Brienne has just chipped away at this person. And to see his emotional struggle, kind of like when he was, we thought he was dying, with Arya standing there watching him, you see that trouble, like him dealing with it and trying to say he couldn't really ask for help. So the only reaction that he knew was to be mean and hateful and spiteful. But you could see it in his eyes that that's not what he wanted to say and do. But that's just the only thing that this is the only thing that I know, because this is all I've known growing up. And ever since then, his transition has been in such a positive way. I kind of got to go with the Hound also.
I'm with the Sansa bandwagon here with this question, but I think an argument could be made a little bit for Daenerys as well, just because look where she came from. I mean, she was basically being sold mm-hmm. for an army at the beginning. Granted, we knew right away that she was the unburnt and all that, but she's been through a lot and she's grown from it quite a bit. I mean, like you said with Sansa, go back to that first episode where she was just, you know, just this little thing that, I mean, she was a child technically, according to the books and everything. And she's grown into a woman that is commanding armies. And
yeah, but there's been a couple of times this year that she's been a sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Just had to get that in there. Just had to get that in there.
I hate you. All right, moving on. Let's play your game. Let's get this done.
All right, so let's play a game. I'm calling it Fly, Try, or Die. What do you want moving forward from Game of Thrones? We know that next season is definitely the end, but would you rather the series keep continuing or get a spinoff or just end it all once the dust or snow settles? So, Scott, you go first.
Well, look at it this way. They do. If HBO puts out anything with the name Game of Thrones attached to it, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to avoid anything they put out. But if I had my way, I would like this to be put to bed, completed, assuming that they wrap up the season 8 in a satisfying way, which I have a hard time believing they won't. Just leave it alone. Let it sit there and be one of the best series on television of all time, in my opinion. And there is some backstories with Ned that I'd like to see, maybe, but just leave it alone. I want it to be this one series and done. I am completely okay with that. But like I said, something happens, I'm going to watch it. There's no way I can avoid it. You guys?
I want this done. I don't want to see another. I don't want to see a spinoff. I don't want to see the continue. I don't want to see anything else from it. If I find out that they did a spinoff and everyone can't shut up about how amazing it is, sure, I'll check it out. But I really just want, I want this to go up in the wall, and I want people to appreciate it for what it is and not see it change from this point on. That's what I want.
The wall's gone, man.
Jesus. Blue fire. Some people are like, is that ice? No, it's fire.
Right.
I would like to try a prequel series. Show us the rebellion that led to Robert taking the throne. I would watch that. Here's my thing. They said that it's not going to happen until after the series is over. So as far as I'm concerned, we'll have that thing to put on the wall. So if they want to try something different, I'm okay. See, I hate how Walking Dead does it, where you've got another show on at the same time, and it's basically the same damn show, really. That doesn't really work for me. But if our series is over and you want to put on something new, I'll give it a whirl. It'll have a new voice, new vision, but it'll be in the same world I know and love. So I'll check it out.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the try camp also. This is got the potential to have so many different, you could go so many different routes with this as far as spinoffs. You could do prequels. You could do what's going on even at the same time as this, just in a different part of the world. So maybe as a web series, even, it may not even have to air on HBO, but do like a, you know, like an internet series. So yeah, I want more. And I think there is a legitimate, and I'm taking my fanboy self out of this statement, but I think there's an opportunity to do more without watering down what we've had for what will be a total of 8 seasons. So mm-hmm. We will have that to put on a mantle and all that stuff and worship it and all that. And nothing will ever compare to this. I don't think whatever is made, if anything else is made, I don't think it will be as good as this, but
I think Westworld has a shot. Westworld. No, I'm not. Oh, you mean in this world?
I'm talking about any additional Game of Thrones stuff. Gotcha. I'm not bringing any other shows into this. I'm not saying there will never be a show as good as this. I'm not.
I understand that.
I'm not saying that. I'm talking about any kind of spinoff or additional or prequels.
I already said I got it. Let's move on. Damn it.
Well, you're the one that makes dumb comments, so.
I'll smack you with my dragon.
I just want to make sure that we're clear. All right, so give me one more little game-ish thing. Let's make a bold prediction. Give me one bold prediction that technically maybe could happen, but is very unlikely. Aaron, go first.
Cersei's pregnant, I believe that, and dies not from backstabbing or war, but during childbirth. I already talked about that. But since I already said that, I'm going to go a different route and say that instead of it being the baby, this is a bold prediction I don't think will happen, it's going to be Jaime is turned into a White Walker who then kills Cersei.
Mm.
There's my bold prediction, outside of the childbirth one that I actually do believe.
So is he heading north, or is he heading to Winterfell?
He already is heading into the snow. He gets turned into a White Walker. They come to King's Landing, kill Cersei.
See, I hate that we share the same brain, because I've got one that's eerily similar to that. But please, John, what you got?
God, that's such a good question. And I thought I was going to come up with something that I really liked.
It just sounds like somebody didn't read the format.
Yep, that's what it sounds prepare. Like to me too.
So I'll give him a couple of seconds. We won't acknowledge that he's unprepared. Mm-hmm. We'll just kind of, I'll go ahead and read mine to stall him, give him a little bit more thinking time. Kind of along your lines there, Aaron, my prediction is Cersei does have her baby, but we find out that it was fathered not by Jaime Lannister, but instead by the Mountain. And this live/undead baby is the first of the next generation of undead threats.
Holy shit, that's beautiful.
And gross.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I'm so more against that than aunts and nephews. I really am. It just feels offensive to a lot of people. Mostly the undead.
That's still beautiful. I think that's amazing.
It's a genius idea, though. Apparently, she's banging them out.
They all die in this little baby that somebody forgets about, that's laying in an alley or whatever. You know, Cersei's dead. The Mountain's dead again. You know, all this stuff is, all these people that we hate are dead, but yet this little baby, you know, whatever, ends up being sent away somewhere. And
the final shot is of this baby in the alley. Its eyes are closed. It opens and its eyes are like a green or something instead of the blue, like the White Walkers.
There you go. Red or, you know, purple or something, whatever.
That's interesting.
And twisted.
Mine has to do with, John and Daenerys getting it on and Tyrion's looking onto that, because I've been thinking that over the last couple of days, especially after the discussions and the Facebook posts and all that. This probably isn't true, and I've already had people tell me that there's no way it's true, but I think Tyrion knows that they're related. And the only way that I can come up with it, he knows that, is that Bran actually has been doing something else besides sitting around being emo in Winterfell, and has sent out a raven to Jon Snow, and Tyrion has intercepted it. We know that he has nothing against reading notes that aren't addressed to him with his conversation with Varys. And so he's aware, but he can't tell anybody, because that makes him look even worse than he already has because of all of his other F-ups. So if Daenerys catches wind of him more or less being a spy, that's going to be problems for him, and he can't tell her that. And that's why he's looking on.
That's a good one.
So I think that is a possibility.
I like that.
I kind of want it to be a possibility, actually, because I like that better than him being looking like he's not going to get the love of his life or something like that. I like that better.
All right. Brian, you ready to go to listener remarks?
Yeah, let's do that. Who wants to go first?
I'll go, because I'm prepared. Brady Joe. Oh, wait, did John ever give his prediction? Did we ever go back to John?
Yeah, no, I gave my prediction. It was right in between Brian and Scott. It happened. Oh. I was there.
We must have edited it out earlier.
John, what's your damn prediction?
I you know what? You guys came up with some beautiful pieces of work there. So the only thing I can say is that is that Brienne's totally going to take down the Hound in a fun naked way.
Okay. So you're saying Brienne basically still gets her giant babies.
That's right.
From the Hound. And then she throws a giant box of dragons.
I tweeted that out the other day. Yes, you know, I said that now that Tormund's out of the picture, which I think we have to assume so at this point, you know, there's the Hound. So she needs a big man that can handle her.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. It makes sense when you guys say it, but when I say it, I'm freaking crazy.
So basically what John did is while he was looking, he just pulled up Brian's Twitter and looked for stuff that he said and said, all right.
Hey, while we're talking about Tormund, and forgive me if I'm completely ignorant in this, because I kind of didn't really understand what happened in that final scene because I was geeking out about the wall situation. Did Tormund bite the dust there, or did he survive, or was that made clear?
It's very unclear. It's very unclear, but it looked like he made it.
What?
Yeah,
it looked like he made what?
I don't know how anybody was on the top of the wall.
At best, he was only 500 feet above ground when that wall come down.
Right.
And
the last time we see him, he's standing at an edge where the wall has broken off. That's the last time we see him. And then from there, we see the dragon just taking off the rest of the wall. It didn't take down the entire wall of the north. It just took down enough section.
His feet.
Right. That's it. Not his feet, but because he was like at that edge. He gets paid enough and he gets a good enough credit that he gets to stand right at the edge where everything else is falling apart.
I saw that a completely different way. I will rewatch it, but I saw it as, hey, he knew early enough to say, we got to haul ass out of here, but it wasn't early enough. And they didn't have the elevator that they had at the main fort. So with that wall, which appeared to me as being, I don't know, all those little shacks or something that were, I don't know if that was construction or scaffolding or whatever. But that wall being weakened, that's how I see the wall being portrayed. Mm-hmm. It was easy for the dragon to take it down. He wasn't out of the way fast enough. He went down with all the rocks and everybody else. And even if he was still there, the dragon's flying over him. You've got 100,000 White Walkers whites that are walking through there, through the gaping hole. There's no way that he survived.
Okay, I got to chime in real quick. Hey, this is the Dukes of Hazzard season of Game of Thrones. Every single freaking episode, how are these Duke boys going to get out of this one? And then the next episode, they're fine. So if I, nobody, no crime, Brian. Nobody, no crime.
Just to argue with myself, back in, what is it, the end of season one, Sam's sitting behind a rock when all these freaking White Walkers come walking right by him. Why didn't they kill him in season one?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, and it's also a wall. It's technically a one big road connected to the other fort. You can run across the top of it.
So he's just laying under some rocks or something? I don't know.
He didn't fall down. He's stuck at the trench.
He's just stuck at the top or something?
Yeah, he's stuck at the top. By? Yeah. If he has half a brain in his head, he's actually running to the other fort at this point.
All right, can we just agree that we don't know what's going to happen to Tormund until next season, for sure?
Yes, we can agree on that. I'll accept those terms.
I still think he made it. Nobody, no crime. All right, listen to remarks. Let's go there. Brady Joe is my first one. It says, my favorite moment was when Arya slit Littlefinger's throat. The entire series, he has been a master of words and manipulation. The whole scene where the Stark kids came together to outwit him was great. And slitting his throat took away from his ability to talk his way out of anything, his greatest asset, but also his downfall. Loved it. And I should say, each of our listeners, we asked in our Facebook group to post what was your favorite moment, your least favorite moment, and your biggest prediction. And we each picked three listener comments to read. She also goes on to say, I don't think Cersei is faking her pregnancy, but I also don't think she will have the baby. I think she will have a miscarriage and then go batshit crazy. All right. My biggest prediction, this is what I really liked, is for Bran, though. While I enjoyed reading the Bran is the Night King theory, I think Bran is actually the Lord of Light and has found a way to communicate while in memories by using fire to show people things he needs them to see.
That's interesting.
Oh, good job, Brady Joe.
Yep. That was a good one. I love that. Leslie Plunkett, my favorite. Tell Cersei I want her to know it was me. My least favorite is every time a Stark returned to Winterfell, so underwhelming and not realistic. Yeah, that's kind of fair, I guess. I've also been struggling with what Cersei ended up saying last night. If fire kills the White Walkers, why can't Dany take the dragons up north and light them up? Anyone?
Well, she just lost a dragon. She's probably a little leery about flying over him again.
Right.
Yeah, she's probably a little gun shy.
Okay. Well, the prediction, Brienne will spoil the plans of Cersei trying to kill Jaime. She thinks she's going to try to kill Jaime. And she also thinks Tyrion is going to return his manipulative ways and make great efforts to split up Dany and Jon. That may mean he ends up switching sides. That's something I agree with. And lastly is Verity German. She says, favorite bits. Arya Scooby-Doo mask peel off in episode 1 was a favorite. Melisandre going AWOL. We didn't even talk about that for a few episodes. And Euron Greyjoy looking like a gothic Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Damn.
Okay. Worst bits. The ridiculous speed at which people, ravens, and dogs traveled to and from everywhere as the season progressed. The White Walkers conveniently having access to all those chains. We already talked about them. And then the subsequent constant arguments between me and my husband over what the White Walker dragon was going to breathe. Was it going to be blue fire? Was it going to be dry ice, wet ice, or just plain ice? We take Game of Thrones technicalities very seriously in this household. That's a good one. Very good.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. If it were ice, you're not going to take down an ice wall with ice. You fight fire with fire. You don't fire ice with ice.
Ice, ice, baby. All right, Scott, who are your picks?
My first one is Adam Moreau. He says, favorite, dragons laying waste to the loot train. And I think the buildup for me on that was almost as good as the actual event. Worst, he says, by far, Jaime Lannister swimming the length of the body of water in a suit of armor underwater to escape. We've talked about that at length already. I also went with Peter Dennis's comment. He said, I'll have to think about my favorite moment for a bit. However, I did enjoy the conversation about Cox at the start of the finale with Jaime and Bronn, who is becoming my favorite. I did like that. Now that a cock, you're not going to have a family. The worst is easy. Dany and Jon effinging. Can I say fucking?
Yeah.
The worst is easy. Dany and Jon fucking in the finale really annoyed me and kind of ruined the whole series for me. I really wish they didn't go down that route.
Oh, come on. The whole series is ruined?
I won't say it ruined the whole series for me, but I was praying that entire time that it wasn't going to happen because I just... More because people were applauding for it, and I just didn't want to make those people happy because that's just gross.
Did you see how beautiful, round, and shiny his ass was? What could ruin that series about... Sorry, I went too far.
Wow.
That didn't quite go exactly where I thought I was going to go, but I applaud your efforts.
I didn't either. And my last one comes from Anna Maria Germa. She says, my favorite moments were Dany and her war council. I love Varys, Tyrion, Olenna, etc., all playing off each other. Maybe not the most viscerally exciting, but some great acting. The season finale dragon pit scene was great for the same reason, in my opinion. The worst moments were when the story believability was broken for reasons of pacing and getting everything done in 7 episodes. How long have we been trapped on this frozen lake? Do you think the Raven got there yet? Predictions? I agree Dany will get pregnant, and I think Cersei is either not pregnant or is pregnant but will lose the baby. Winterfell will be besieged, but will hold out for a while, at least once the North becomes armed with dragon glass. Dany's remaining dragons set up a series of perimeter fires, and everyone digs in. The other houses to the south will rally to the help of Winterfell, while Cersei remains entrenched in King's Landing and becomes increasingly isolated. There you go.
All right. Johnny?
Yvette Olez Lugo says, favorite moment was the season open with Arya Frey poisoning the House Frey. Also, Sam montage at the Citadel. Worst moment was the Jon and others on the rock and the island. Everything about that scene. Yeah, I get it. It was kind of fun, but kind of like, no, not really. Jennifer Maloney. Favorite moment, seeing a dragon melt the wall. Worst moment, seeing a dragon melt the wall. I think that's the only way to say that. I just love the way she typed that. And then Ruben McDade, favorite moment was definitely when Arya returned to Winterfell and went toe-to-toe with Brienne in a sparring session and was so unbelievably badass. As for my least favorite, probably how rushed the series felt.
Mm. Brian, you're up.
All right. So first up is Amy Hutchison. She says her favorite is Tell Cersei. I want her to know it was me. I think that was pretty much a favorite for a lot of us. Her worst one was Bran's return to Winterfell and Cersei's wig. Like, I can't even deal with that thing.
Is it a wig?
It's a wig.
I don't know. I like it.
Right. I like it too, but it's a wig.
I mean, Dany's is very noticeable because you see Emilia Clarke, and she obviously doesn't have that kind of hair. But I think Cersei looks kind of hot. So
I want to talk to your manager haircut.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That was my favorite meme.
That's fine. Talk to my manager.
Amy's prediction is Cersei is faking her pregnancy. Dany will become pregnant. Either Jon or Dany will try to sacrifice themselves to save the other, but Jorah will step in because his love for her and her happiness is more important than damn than his own life. She goes on for quite a bit. Theon will die saving Yara. So
whatever kills him quick. That's all I want.
Yep. Next is Ruthie Rink. Least favorite scene, when Jaime uses his emergency flotation plot device armor to somehow magically swim a mile or so away instead of emerging from the water with no armor on at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, he should have been captured by Dany, which would have been a better Jaime Tyrion Bronn reunion.
Agreed.
Favorite scene is a toss-up between the loot train battle and when Littlefinger finally gets what's coming to him, courtesy of Arya, the Stark assassin. Close second when Arya takes out all the Freys. And she really didn't have any predictions, but only hopes. And the last one is Ty Nelson. His favorite moment was the meeting at the Dragon Pit. So much tension and awkwardness while waiting for Dany to arrive. It's also cool to see all the connections amongst all the main characters. The worst moment was Sam's shit day. And watching the closing credits on the finale. His prediction is a heartbreaking battle when Dany's two dragons have to destroy the Walker's new dragon.
Oh, flying puppies versus flying puppies. I can't do it. And even in Westeros, they wait for the pretty girl. That drives me nuts, man. Pretty girl's always late.
See, maybe the hound throws a spear and kills it. I don't know. A dragon glass spear.
Maybe.
That would actually be apropos.
Wow. I didn't know you spoke French.
I didn't either.
You know what? Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is really just about it. Remember, you can find us at thehollywoodoutsider.com, on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Download our other podcasts, Remake This Movie Right, where we remake a movie, only we do it right. I appreciate all you guys helping me out with this. And remember, there's up to a year and a half wait for season 8. Winter is already here, and you're hungry, so buy popcorn.
And remember, incest is always wrong, until it's not.
Damn.
He needs to know the truth.
The truth about what?
About himself. No one knows. No one but me. Jon isn't really my father's son. He's the son of Rhaegar Targaryen and my aunt, Lyanna Stark. He was born in a tower in Dorne. His last name isn't really Snow. It's Sand.
He's not.
Dornish bastards are named Sand.
At the Citadel, I transcribed a High Septon's diary. He annulled Rhaegar's marriage to Aelya. He wed Rhaegar and Lyanna in a secret ceremony.
Are you certain?
It's what the High Septon wrote in his private diary. I don't know why he'd lie. Is this something you can see?
Father, Smith, Warrior. Mother, Maiden, Crone. Stranger. I am hers, and she is mine. From this day until the end of my days.
Robert's rebellion was built on a lie. Rhaegar didn't kidnap my aunt or rape her. He loved her. And she loved him. John. John's real name?
His name is Aegon Targaryen. You have to protect him. Promise me, Ned.
He's never been a bastard. He's the heir to the Iron Throne.